because there's a bit of a time, I'm not sure, communication breakdown, or people are used that we meet at 10 o'clock, something that they're meeting at, and I don't know who told them, because the notice is quite clear, it's 9, and something is like sort of 9:30. But we have to start. I think some members are coming because they thought it's 9:30 or 10. Welcome to the committee. Agenda item today is the briefing on the energy efficiency strategy and the briefing by the CETAs, but there's only one CETA that is going to brief us. I think it's the energy CETA, the CHIEDA. They are unable to come because they are, I don't know, they are put under administration, but also they've been suspended. There's that particular report. So as such, then we'll have only one energy sector. And then that will be closure and announcement. So it's not a long meeting as we perceived it to be at the time due to the changes. Because this happened, the suspension and the administration thing came just this week. So we felt that we have to continue with the meeting. The apologies, we've got how many apologies, Ajablile? Let's delete apologies and others and then we'll start the meeting. The first one is from the minister. She's accompanying the president to People's Republic of China. State visits.
Trip.
Second one, Honorable Khatele, organizational commitments, not able to attend the committee. Honorable Member Mapela, she's doing some work by elections coming in a constituency. The last one is from Honorable Khreileng. From Tuesday 17th until Monday 7th September 2010, he's currently not in the country. Went to China on a business trip and only back in September. So those are the written apologies, and also from the Director General of the Department, because she's part of the delegation to China with the President and the Minister. So those are the only written apologies we have, except for the ones that are late coming, that members will be joining us soon. Are we accepting the apologies? Honorable Lucas, it's the two of us that must move and second. Okay, you move the sentence, then I'll second. There's only two members present at the time. I think also then just on, I'm not sure because there are members who are not here to deal with the invitation to attend the AWEPA. Let's deal with it, I think, towards the end of the meeting. And a few changes to the program. The first item, as I indicated, is the briefing by the Department of Energy on the strategy. I see the acting DDG. Upon, I still acting or it's now been confirmed? It's too long, man. I hope they're doing something. We don't want to be the Hollywood department, no? With acting positions. I see you are the one who will then lead the discussion and also see the spokesperson from the department and the director, and Sita is here as well. We'll hand over then to you to give us the presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, my name is Ompia Pani from the Department of Energy. We're going to be doing a presentation on an update regarding the energy efficiency strategy and its implementation so far. If I can maybe start by introducing my colleagues, Mr. Kumalo will handle most of the questions that relate to the energy efficiency campaign and the awareness building. And then Maputi Lukodi will do the actual presentation. So without much further ado, I'm going to ask Maputi to take us through it.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Mr. Apan. Let me just go straight into the presentation as I've been introduced. The presentation outline would look at the progress in as far as implementation is concerned. It will talk to the savings accumulated over a period up to today. It will look at the general awareness for the campaign, the implementation of the EE program within the public building program, the municipal program, as well as the policy processes that are unfolding within the department in as far as the energy efficiency is concerned. Then we'll then come to the conclusion. In as far as introduction is concerned, we all know that the energy efficiency programs and initiatives are world's most preferred, you know, the intervention in as far as keeping the carbon dioxide emissions are concerned. And we also take a mandate from the energy efficiency strategy, which set a target of 12% by 2015. We still believe that the target is ambitious, but it's achievable. In as far as the interaction with other stakeholders, there has been an energy efficiency accord that was signed some few years ago with the industry, facilitated by NBI, to ensure that industry plays a role in as far as the implementation of the energy efficiency strategy is concerned. There is also an energy efficiency technical committee that was formed to look at the implementation process, to coordinate in actual fact the implementation process between the government leadership as well as the industry. We look at the cumulative target verified as of 30th of June 2010. This is just an analysis of what has been happening over the years. If you look at the cumulative target of about, if you look at the cumulative target of about 1.8, and you relate that to the NERSA, in fact that ESCOM cumulative target, you relate that to NERSA's cumulative target of about 1.5, and you look at what has been contracted to date, in as far as the programs are concerned, is about 2.2 megawatts. But what is actually verified to date is about 1892 megawatts. That's what has been verified in as far as the implementation is concerned. The outline, therefore, in as far as the achievement is concerned to date, as of 30th of July, we have been able to verify the savings amount of 70 megawatts within this financial year. In as far as the energy efficiency campaign is concerned, we've got a trend in as far as budget allocations are concerned. In 2008-09, we had about 15 million. 2009-10, we had about 10 million. And then 2010-11, we've got another 10 million. And it is worth mentioning that these figures, really, the amount that has been spent is too little as compared to what needs to happen in as far as energy exchange is concerned. If you look at the 2009-10, there was an updated figures there. I think this slide was a bit old. But what we can assure the committee here is that the entire 10 million was spent. It will, you know, be indicated in the next slide as to how that amount has been spent. This is the roadmap in as far as the energy efficiency campaign is concerned. You would see that from 2008-09, there are a number of PR work that has been done leading up to 2009-2010. There has been some media relations, there has been some interviews, radio and TV programs, and that work is being, you know, moved towards, or it carried over to 2010-2011. Because of the budget, you know, constraints, we may not be able to achieve much, but I think there has been some work done over, at the beginning of the year, but till now. The achievements in as far as advertising is concerned, in the 2009, from March the 23rd, there has been some teasers and reveal that went live on TV, respectively with the April showcasing. That process concluded in June of 2009. There has been some creative displays that were made nationally in Durban, Gauteng, Cape Town, and in PE. The teaser seen on media for the direct markets ran from 23rd March 2009 until 5th April 2009. The reveal thing ran from 6th April 2009 to 27th April 2009. So you can see that there is some work that is unfolding as far as the advertising is concerned. These are some of the adverts that came out of the media, both in the print and the electronic media. I will just go through, page them one by one, Chair, I think for the sake of time. Some of these were, you know, activated within the schools program, mainly to ensure that we attract the kids in as far as to understand what needs to happen in energy efficiency programs. A number of energy efficiency awareness campaigns activations were done in 40 schools in Gauteng province. I think, Chair, in our last study group meeting, you indicated that you wanted to see what was happening as far as the schools program is concerned. And clearly here we're trying to show that there has been some work that has been done as far as schools program is concerned. There was an issue around the, you know, introduction of the EE program or study line within the syllabus for the children. That work is unfolding. There's about 24 lesson plans content that is now part of the school curriculum for learners. And this will be introduced, you know, as and when the process continues. And some of the examples of the completed activation, Chair, would be shown in this slide. These are some of the activations that we have put forward for the children. You would see here we went to schools and then we activated some of these activities with the children, in front of the children, particularly to get that enthusiasm out of the children so that they can live with the knowledge of having to save energy going forward. This is one of the MIGZIP programs that was launched by the minister in August 2009 in Kimberley. It's an electronic game. Children can access it over the phone through the MIGZIP, and they can play that game just to ensure that we sensitize the children as far as the programs and the objectives are concerned. We have already established a website where the explanation on why we should save energy would be made available. Some of the energy efficiency tips would be made available on the website. You know, there are linkages to other website to other published editorials in as far as energy efficiency is concerned. So this is just to create a broader, you know, information sharing in as far as energy efficiency is concerned. the impact of the awareness campaign. This is just an assessment of what people became aware or what prompted people to be aware of energy efficiency. Of course, load shedding tops the agenda. Everybody was aware that it is important to save energy immediately after the load shedding. And most of the people were saying that they've seen this or they've gotten the knowledge of saving energy from the radio and TV and other, you know, electronic media. Some of the current efforts that were made to deal with energy crisis, if you look at the slide, it shows you what has transpired over a period. The constant reminders to save electricity were one of those things that people were saying, we are aware because we keep on getting these messages that we need to save electricity. The handing over of energy efficiency bulbs is one of the things that, you know, brought that knowledge to the public to say, you need to implement or use as much more energy efficiency technologies as possible. So those are some of the things that we are trying to, you know, educate the public in as far as energy efficiency is concerned. How far does the advertisement or have the advertisement influenced the consumption behavior? About 86% of those people who have been, you know, contacted in as far as assessment is concerned said they have changed their consumption patterns because now they understand the importance of energy and energy efficiency in general. 14% were just saying, no, we are not aware, and mainly you can tell that there's a lot that has been done in as far as the percentages are concerned. In terms of the CFL disposal awareness campaign, it is worth noting that the CFL contains a small amount of mercury, which is hazardous if accumulated in large amounts in groundwater. So failed CFLs should therefore not be discarded in the general household waste stream. So that's the kind of messages that we are sending across to say, if you've got a broken CFL, try and put it, you know, in a separate, or you can put it in a plastic and wrap it up and then put it in the dustbin. Don't expose it to the children and because it can create harm if it's taken in large quantities. What we have also done is that we have engaged ESCOM to say that in as far as the rollout is concerned, they must ensure that the standards in as far as the ROSH is concerned should be complied at all times. The ROSH is an international standard which determines the safety of the CFL, and as far as the mercury content, it does give a limitation. You can see that it talks about the 5 milligrams per lamp of the mercury content. That's the limit that the standard prescripts in as far as the mercury content is concerned. We have also engaged the Department of Environmental Affairs to look at ways in which they can put measures in place in as far as legislation is concerned to force or to implement the waste management in as far as the disposal of CFLs is concerned. So that process is unfolding. What has happened is that the Department of Environmental Affairs has requested the industry to develop a strategy on how the disposal of the CFLs would be handled. There has been a number of processes that was made in as far as the retail shops are concerned. If you go to Woolworths today, Pick and Pay and Makro, you would find that there is a bin where some of these broken CFLs and those who are failing can be returned to this retail shop or retail outlet. There's also an electronic waste that is being moved around within the Gauteng province where people can always dump in those failed CFLs. And I think some of the municipalities are also coming on board to say that they are, you know, encouraging their customers to address the issue of the waste disposals of the CFLs by putting them in a separate bin. I know Nelson Mandela Bay is one of those municipalities that is doing that process. So do we still need more communications? The answer is yes. It's clear that the supply and demand challenges are here, and we're still going to live with them for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And therefore, it is important that we communicate this sort of information to the masses out there, not only to the masses, but also to all stakeholders, you know, involved within the energy sector. If you look at what is happening in as far as the 2011 supply and demand, you know, forecast is concerned, it shows a shortfall of about 1,357 megawatts, and that goes beyond what the supply level is concerned, or what the supply level is. So you can tell that there is a lot that needs to be done as far as energy efficiency awareness campaigns is concerned. Some of the tasks at hand from the supply side, we need to profile government in as far as what they are doing currently in relation to energy policies. That information has to be made available to the public, let the people understand and see what government is doing and its commitment towards, you know, ensuring the security of supply. On the demand side, we also have to provide a comprehensive and strong energy efficiency campaign to ensure that, you know, when you provide people with information in as far as the current situation is in relation to policy issues, they also understand what would be their you know, what would be expected of them in terms of the actions that they have to do to ensure that they contribute towards ensuring that there is security of supply. What has been prepared for 2011-2012, the GCIS met with Treasury team on IMC on energy, on funding options. This is mainly to highlight issues around the inadequate funds made available from Treasury. So the view is that there's more money that needs to be allocated for the energy efficiency campaigns. There are workshops that are held with municipalities, Saneri, Department of Energy, DSM work group members, and ESCOM, as well as tertiary institutions, to try and, you know, coordinate efforts in as far as energy efficiency campaigns is concerned. The idea here is that we need to close gaps so that when we send messages out there, in as far as, to deal with issues of energy efficiency, you don't find somebody saying something that is an opposite of what has been said by another. So we're trying to create that harmonization and coordination, to coordinate that particular process. We've also agreed on the proposed institutional arrangement to clearly say government should lead the energy efficiency and awareness campaigns, and the rest of the stakeholders involved would have to support government so that there is a clear line of how things should be done going forward. There are programs in as far as energy efficiency implementation is concerned. My apologies, Chair. There are programs that were implemented within the public building sector by the Department of Public Works. This is just to give an overview of what has happened over the years. If you look at some of the contracts that were signed by Public Works from 1997 to date, it shows that there were a number of shared savings contracts that were signed with service providers within the Pretoria region, Cape Town region, and Johannesburg region, as well as Bloemfontein, where the savings were shared, you know, 50-50, 60-40 between Joburg and other provinces. And it also shows that within the Pretoria region alone, in the second round, about 8.3 million was saved between 2003-2004 financial year to 2007-2008 financial year. In the Johannesburg region, in 1999, the department entered into a shared savings contract where 19 sites were involved. about 600 buildings with subsequent energy savings of 12.858 kilowatt hours was achieved, and that figure was cumulative to from 1999 to 2008-2009. So there are a number of programs that are being implemented within the public works sector. In 2009-8-9, there were financials that were made available by Treasury, to particularly assist the Department of Public Works to implement energy efficiency programs. About 53,026 luminaires were implemented in 21 sites, and there is some significant savings that was achieved over that period. Then in 2009-10, there was a 35 million rand available, and 17 sites were looked at. Around 1,206 buildings were retrofitted with 43,856 luminaires. An amount of about 6.2 million was saved over a period in relation to the implementation of that program. In the 2010-2011, about 75 million is made available from Treasury. And what has been happening to date is that the public works have gone out on a tender, on a shared savings contract. The process of appointing the service providers is still underway, and we are hoping that it will be completed by the end of August. In as far as the Schedule 6 and 7 EDSM allocations is concerned, there are about 19 municipalities that are involved within the program. And those 19 municipalities were selected on the basis of their high load centers. We looked at the bigger metros and bigger secondary municipalities primarily to try and address the issues around the reduction of the consumption. So an amount of 220 million has been made available in the 2009-2010 financial year. Of that 220 million, 175 was allocated to municipalities, and then 75 was allocated to ESCOM under Schedule 7. So that process led to about 153,608 street building and traffic luminaires being retrofitted until to date. Now, there is about 328 million that is being allocated for 2010-2011, and the municipalities have just started with the rolling out of continuing rolling out of this program. 398 million would be made available in the next financial year, and it is a well-known fact that these allocations would come to an end in the 2011-2012 financial year. So going forward, we don't know what will happen. Some of the initiatives to support implementation of EE strategy, the current processes are such that we are reviewing the energy efficiency strategy to try and look at the current development in as far as energy sector is concerned. So the strategy is, the idea was that we needed to revisit whether the targets that were set in the strategy are being achieved, or what is the progress to date. So those are the reasons why we review the strategy. The Energy Efficiency Accord has been reviewed. As I've mentioned before, that the Minister has entered into an Energy Efficiency Accord with bigger industrial partners, and that accord has been reviewed after a three-year period to try and see how best can we come up with better ideas to implement the Energy Efficiency Accord. There's a technical committee that was formed within the SABS to specifically look at the energy efficiency standards. So there are processes in as far as the standards development is concerned. There are a number of standards that are already in place, standards for electric motors, household appliances. Those standards that would be made mandatory in no time. The DTI is also in the process of finalizing the gazetting of the National Building Regulation to include the standard on energy efficiency building. So that standard has been completed. What is required now is for the DTI to incorporate that into the National Building Regulation and enforce it as a regulation. There is an appliance labeling program which the department has started a long time ago. It still talks to the issues of the standard, primarily to try and transform the appliance market to become that of an efficient nature. So this is, this program looks at the appliances holistically, with the effort to transform the appliance market. There is a process in as far as the industrial energy efficiency program is concerned. It has come to our attention that the industry is struggling to implement energy efficiency programs, primarily because some of the industry partners are energy intensive. Now it becomes difficult for them to implement energy efficiency programs. So now what we have done is that we have partnered with the UNIDO to try and, you know, create capacity within the industrial sector in as far as energy management is concerned. That process includes the Department of Trade and Industry, which has also come on board as part of the role player to try and, you know, streamline the process of implementation. We are also working on the implementation of energy efficiency tax incentive. The regulations are already out for public comment in as far as Treasury is concerned. The part that was done by Department of Energy was finalized, and then the regulations were sent to Treasury for publication. So that process is unfolding. There are other programs in as far as energy efficiency and demand side management is concerned. You would note that we have made commitment to the rollout of solar water heating program. That program is still unfolding. In conclusion, the implementation of energy efficiency strategy, we believe, requires an infrastructure. An infrastructure in the sense that you need to have incentives, you need to have legislation. You also need to have government departments working together to ensure that as government we lead the way. So that is our view in as far as that is concerned. Also, the introduction of carbon tax in the transport sector, we believe this will help in transforming the transportation sector. However, we believe that careful consideration in relation to the implementation of the carbon tax needs to be taken care of, in the sense that most of the vehicles still follows the international standards. So there is that sensitivity that needs to be taken into account when this program is being implemented. And we've been engaging Treasury and BUSA and other departments and other partners to look at ways in which we can, you know, implement this program, you know, efficiently. The monitoring of the progress in as far as energy efficiency is concerned has been an issue, but we are glad to say today that the minister has signed an agreement with the Swiss Development Corporation to develop a methodology which would be used nationally to monitor the progress in as far as energy efficiency implementation is concerned. So that program has already started. The department is working with the consultant from the Swiss Development Corporation to implement and develop that methodology. We believe that a continued financial support to the municipalities, the continued financial support to the awareness campaign and other government-led EDFM programs is essential. As government, we need to lead by example, and the only way we can do that is to make sure that we are visible in as far as these programs are concerned. We need to finalize the issues around the energy efficiency regulations and promulgate those regulations, particularly to address the issues of efficient practices. We need to address the issues of technologies that are coming in and link it with the other development, new technologies that are coming into the fray. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Any questions, comments from members, clarities on the presentation? Honorable Lucas, Matibe, those are the first two.
Thank you, Chair. I look around this room and I'm thinking of anything. I think this is a serious issue, and I think it has been mentioned about education. I think that is the best way. And when you look at the TV and you see at the bottom, the problem is still is that in, we are a developing country and we are adding electricity in my day was never in the rural areas, and now we've had to include this. Therefore, we need more grid. At one time, they were, we said we had too much grid. And I said at one stage that it was said that we had too much grid, and therefore we even closed down a couple of power stations, which, if you look back, you'd say, hey, it was quite a mistake. Therefore, we are short now. But it's because we never thought of the people who didn't have electricity. And the solar water heat program, we're talking about it too long. We are really talking about it too long. There is time we should be implementing it, and that time I think is overdue. And we could start with government buildings, and that would be. I remember when the Minister of Health, when she said we must not smoke in public places, everyone just thought, we will not do this. We will continue smoking. But it has been one of those practices which has been very effective. And as far as health is concerned, it has helped everybody. So I think if we do take a firm stand and we say we're going to do it, we will be able to do it. We need action, action, action. There are many small companies who are prepared to put up the water the solar water heating program. But there's no way of getting in and getting a start. I think that the department should help in some way. And there are areas, I know the difficulty of implementing, say for instance, we talk about electric cars and that, I think we are far away from that. We're still miles away from that. Because you are saving, and of course in the evening you're going to go recharge, so you're still using it. And I think the fuel is going to be, the crude is going to be with us for many, many years to come, until we get something which is really efficient and will help. The real thing that I think we can also be very effective is town planning. We should be very strict on this. We should not allow a building which is not efficient to go, especially all new buildings. And I think if we do that, we can do so. I see in your presentation you talk about the National Building Regulation. That must be implemented because that will help. The other issue is traffic lights. I'm not sure whether the experiment has been done, whether we couldn't have traffic lights done by solar. And with a combined system at night when there's no light, we could also assist with electricity, but the bulk of it be solar controlled, because that is where the municipalities could come to the fore. We and I must just say, electricity, I say this again, is one of the easiest things, because it's a flick of a button and you get light, and you get so square. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I won't be out of order. Chairperson, I just want to ask about the CFLs. Is it the same as, the energy saving bulbs? Are they the globes? Are they the same with the CFLs? The other one, Honorable Lucas has touched was that about the solar heaters, solar water heaters. I just want to know how far, how many provinces have that been done already? Thank you.
If I can just maybe make some comments regarding the issues raised by Honorable Lucas, the traffic lights issue, a number of pilots have already been undertaken, and it has been proven that, in fact, not from energy savings due to electricity itself, due solar water, I mean traffic, solar traffic lights make an impact. It's mainly due to the positive impact on transport logistics. Because what happens is that when there is a power failure and the traffic lights don't work, you waste a lot of fuel trying to get through the traffic. But the actual amount of electricity itself that is saved is not is minimal. And on that basis, we have decided that it forms part of the suite of options for municipalities to change their traffic lights only in specific intersections that are critical. And then to the point about the town planning issue, is that unfortunately this is now a legacy that we're dealing with. The town planning going forward and so on, even in terms of new buildings, there are regulations now insofar as buildings, that all buildings that need to heat water above a certain, all buildings of a certain, above a certain size that need to heat water must use solar water heating by law. And most houses, I mean, we've agitated that the houses that are being built going forward must be north facing, so as to take advantage of the sun. But I need to reiterate, it's the legacy that is the problem. It's not the going forward. And then in terms of the solar water heating program, we indicated that we have allocated for the first time about 340 million rand for the first program of to roll out solar water heating. It is not covering the full country at this point. A number of pilots are being tested at this point. The intention being that at the beginning of next year, we would then have a fiscal program that covers all the provinces. You would also recall that we have made an undertaking here that we would roll out 200,000 by the end of April next year. And I can indicate that at this point we're looking at already about 60,000 systems that are currently being rolled out from the fiscal program, but also from the various pilots. So we're slightly behind, but we think we're going to catch up once the incentive scheme for implementation of solar water heating and other energy efficiency interventions that come into play.
So that's a small addition. Honorable Lucas spoke about the power alert, the one that is on television each evening. It's a program that is run by the public broadcaster in concert with Eskom. But if you look at it, I mean, the power of communication is about repeating of messages, consistent messages, because the problem with it is that if you have a campaign not properly funded and with the 10 million or so that have been allocated, you have a situation where the least you could do is to do live reads. Now, live reads are those things on radio where presenters from time to time will read a message, a script. And if you look at the 10 million that was spent, was largely used for that. But to run a massive campaign of the size that we require with a shortfall that is predicted in the slides that Director Maputi spoke to, does indicate that we need some creative ways of doing advertising, and I think Power Alert is but one mechanism. And quite clearly, when the public see that the lights are on and there's no load shedding, they assume that all is well. To use Hamlet in the state of Denmark, to use the same as expression, but it's not really like that. I think that they clearly we're living on the edge. We are not out of the woods. And therefore, in that period, 2011, 2012, when there were those projected shortfalls, you need to up the ante in relation to that kind of role of that power alert. So it's a great pity that it comes in during peak time, but we wish we could do more, but it's an effective way. I agree with our honorable member. Thank you.
Chair, there was a question about the solar water heating penetration in the provinces and how far we were. I think that is
thank you. mine would be on the program, they're talking about the energy efficiency in the public works buildings. Now, here is some sites, the couples on in the years. I would like to say, person, if you have this extended public works program, but also in the energy one, and I think we're also talking about that extended public works programs must also transfer skills, but they must also create job opportunities in the relief poverty. So I will really know from you say in Cape Town, Pretoria, and those Bloemfontein and those areas, but I really want to know how many, never mind who have the contract, how many work that they really provide, of to how many households that they provide this job opportunity. The other one will be on the issue of, you're talking about your EEDSM allocation, and you talk about 90 municipalities over 3 years. Who are these municipalities? In which province? Because we must know where we roll out this program.
Maybe just in addition, the 19 municipalities, I think, are quite essential that you know which municipalities. But also just on your conclusion slide, you indicate that monitoring progress has been the biggest challenge in measuring the progress of the strategy's implementation. Then how do you gather the information that you just presented, that there's so much progress, people are aware, 86% of people know in this country that what is the energy efficiency strategy and all that. Where were you doing that, and how then did you come up with such information? Because as far as I'm concerned, as a resident of this country, very few communication and campaigns that are there to educate people about the energy efficiency program or strategy. Yes, in 2008, after the load shedding, it was then, you know, the big issue in 2008. But after that, what is there that you can say you are using as a department then to give us this information? Because I'm so surprised that the buildings of public works, I mean, the number that you are putting here, it's like I'm not a resident living here, that they're energy efficient. I don't know how you gather those, and you are sure, or you are thumbsucking, or somebody's just telling you, you've never been there. I mean, to say this, what is going on? I mean, can you really explain to us as to what is it? That can convince us that, I mean, this is really the information. And also, just you say electronically you've done this, even mixed it, etc. I mean, ordinary people don't have the electronic means of accessing this information. So in those areas that are like townships and other areas, how do they get to know about this particular strategy? Because not everybody can access the website and all these other issues. So I don't know. It's a good thing for Mixit, but I'm not sure, because just Mixit and others have got also other unintended consequences that then end to pornography, others. How do you make sure that this one is just okay, people are using it in the right manner? So if you can maybe answer to those.
So if we can start with the last question that you raised, the whole electronic media and Mixit and so on, is that we took the advice of government communication and information services, and the strategy around communicating this energy efficiency issue was premised on a recognition that young children, right, have a massive role to play. And that premise is that children tend to influence the behavior of their parents very effectively, number one. And secondly is that a lot of the children, the Generation X, as it's called, use electronic media, including Mixit. And on that basis, a specific segment of the community, which is school children, was then identified as being a target, and therefore that message and that medium was tailor-made for them. The intention is not for everybody else, the adults and those that do not have access to that medium to, you know, to rely on it. It's not like that is the target. Now, over and above the kids was another element in the strategy which related to making people feel guilty in the print medium sense. In other words, where a campaign was put together where using energy inefficiently was equated to being a drug addict, kind of. And, you know, somebody appeared on this campaign indicating that they had a problem, and, you know, this, without people really knowing what this was about. So that's the kind of background. It was a package campaign that was put together with assistance of government, GCIS, in order to target specific segments. However, Chair, having said that, is that we recognize that there are certain limitations in that approach. It is a start, there are limitations. One of the biggest limitations is the fact that this is not a campaign that, you know, you do once off and then you think that you have made the impact. Hence the other question that you raised about how we assess the extent of the impact and how we gather information about its efficacy. Unfortunately, we don't have enough money, or we did not have enough money at that point to sustain the campaign. As you'd have noticed, it's a campaign that had a window. It came and went. And what we're wanting to do now is to have something that gets sustained throughout. And it is a partnership that government, together with business, you know, are putting together so that we don't just come from one side and foot all the bills, but it's more like even business contributes towards a, if you like, a national a campaign. But then, more directly, is that over and above having done this campaign, another assessment was done as to how much impact has been raised, and that's what that graph refers to. It's a market survey. A sample was taken as to what people think about the campaign and how it has impacted their behavior and so on. So we use outside experts when it comes to, I should rather say that the team, including GCIS, used outside experts in order to assess the impact of the various campaigns. In terms of the buildings program, you might be aware that the CFL program, the Compact Fluorescent Lighting Program, we're trying to find, Honorable Makibela, sorry, asked the question about CFLs, and we were going to try and show a picture in one of them, is that that program started a very long time ago. So when we say certain buildings have been done, is that the first wave involved doing what we call low-hanging fruit, like energy efficient lighting. So even Parliament, for example, right? Parliament, the union buildings were covered under the program to change the incandescent lighting to more efficient lighting and so on. But again, it's a question of sustainability. You don't do it and leave it. You need to be able to ensure that 6,000 hours later when the lights fail, you don't go back to the old fitting, but you keep replacing with the new ones. And in that regard, the Department of Trade and Industry has indicated a target date in terms of which they're going to impose duties on inefficient lighting, so that when you go to the shops, it influences your behavior as well. You don't go
incandescent light as opposed to the CFL, simply because the prices were different. The program's job creation potential is well appreciated. What we do not have at this point is a proper socio-economic impact instrument like what we use in electrification. Just to refresh your memories, in electrification, every year we commission a socio-economic impact assessment of all the projects that have been done in respect of the number of jobs that have been done, the number of new SMMEs that have been developed, the amount of revenue that went into previously disadvantaged communities, and so forth. We are not at that point yet with the energy efficiency program, but almost, I think that is one of the weaknesses. That because the program is only starting now, and the program is linked to the extended public works philosophy, we also need to then come back and report in terms of quantified number of jobs that are being created and so on. I don't know if my colleague Maputi has already got the list of the 19 municipalities. Okay, but off the top of my head, we can indicate it's all the metropolitan areas, the six of them. There are in each of the provinces, I think all the secondary cities are covered as well, including Polokwane, Bloemfontein, Rustenburg, Sunduzi. Do you have the name? Okay, so we. Sorry, my colleague will just give you a more accurate list.
Yeah, I think as Mr. Pane has just mentioned, we've got six big metros, which is Joburg, Nelson Mandela Bay, Ekurhuleni, Tshwane, City of Cape Town, and then you have small municipalities. Those are, in fact, secondary municipalities, those are Mbombela, Rustenburg, Polokwane, Ladysmith, Msunduzi, and then you have Eden, Bidou, Canaland, Mossel Bay, and George. Those are the municipalities involved in this program.
If I can just indicate that was the original program in the previous financial year. For this financial year, we have, as indicated, we have additional allocations that have been put together, and a lot more equitable distribution of the allocation is going to be introduced as opposed to those particular municipalities. The background there is that we had invited all municipalities at that point to submit business plans regarding how they could improve energy efficiency. Those municipalities that had responded had actually been allocated the funding on a particular basis.
Thanks. So can I just add one small thing, Chairman? Just a very, very small addition. You know, this thing of mixed that Honorable Member raised, it's true, mixed is like a knife that is sharp on both sides. Unless you are able as a parent, I think all of us, to guide our children, they may go and use it for reasons other than that which will build them as human beings. And in fact, I just want to point out that the minister, when she spoke to the children when there was this activation and mixed it launch, she mentioned it very strongly
And I remember very well, it was carried quite widely on radio and television to say to children, the dangers of mixed signal notwithstanding, this is a positive side to it. Just the last point I really want to also make is that the issue that the honorable member raised about how people know about this. As someone who has done and worked past the entirety of the media spread in this country, I really do know, and I'm not saying anything against my colleagues in the print media. Radio and television are probably reach more people in this country, 19 million people every day. And with just live reads and with the amount of money you spend, you will be able, therefore, to point out, and I agree with the honorable member, that perhaps more could be done to warn the children against the dangers. Just the last point, I don't know whether honorable members do remember the famous Nomkita ad on radio. I think most people remember it. The voice of a child who berates the sister, Nomkita, for spending a lot of time on the shower because she has a date. And in fact, that ad, the world acclaimed ad, and it has done very well in terms of nominations, and because of its reach and impact that it has. So in terms of advertising and believability or otherwise, and I'm sure colleagues who are involved in this will agree with me that if you use children to advertise anything, parents are more likely to believe children than they would believe, as it were, the adults. So Mixit was chosen by ourselves with the GCIS colleagues purely on that basis. It's probably the most powerful medium of advertising globally. I mean, it's a global trend, whether if you travel to major cities in the West today and you see how they do the ads, you'll be amazed at how children have become the centerpiece, if I can use that expression, of advertising industry as it evolves in the 21st century.
The role of big business. Madam Chair, I'd say the role of big business. You know, we look at the place like Richards Bay. An amount of the Trinity that is used here. Do these people come to the party? Do these candidate spouses come to the party? How are we operating there? Because, and I do know they get a price which is not what's the normal price. They have a price which it's much different to the ordinary householder. What are they doing to come to the party?
I think the other question that I'm not sure, the 19 municipalities that you mentioned, but what is the plan then for other municipalities? But also, you know, some of them have got their own challenges. How are you going to deal with that issue in terms of all of them then following the picture? And on the monetary, on your slide again, on the conclusion, you said the introduction of the carbon tax in the whatever, all of these things. But you say, however, the technology largely follows international standards and the implementation of carbon tax require careful implementation and stakeholder consultation. What does that mean? I mean, do you think the Minister of Finance then didn't do his homework, or what is it? Because I think, where do you put the question of the Kyoto Protocol and some of the Copenhagen Accord that we're part of as a country and all that? Can you just maybe unpack that particular statement as what is it that you are trying to say?
So if I may, perhaps we needed to have been more clear about what we meant with the carbon tax issue. There is a policy development process not under our auspices, but under National Treasury, to introduce a broad carbon tax on various energy programs. Electricity is one of them. You might have already been aware of the 2 cents per kilowatt hour levy carbon tax that has been introduced or ostensibly to be a carbon tax. There is even more work that is being done. And I think, Chair, the mention of a specific carbon tax, particularly in the transport sector, needs to be understood in that context. We're not agitating for a particular, you know, targeted tax in the transport sector outside of a national treasury fiscal policy framework. It's just the fact that in some instances there has been very clear indication that behavior can also be impacted through carbon taxes, and that's what other countries do. And this, South Africa is also moving towards a dispensation where carbon tax is going to be a mechanism that gets introduced in the energy space, not specifically in the transport sector only. So if I can move to the question about the role of big business, maybe what we omitted to indicate here is, I think I might have very briefly touched on it, is that we see energy efficiency, a successful energy efficiency program, as being one where various stakeholders play their role, be it business, government, and community. And perhaps our approach in the past has been one premise largely on ESCOM, and then lately government alone, and with business and civil society being left behind. Not only will that kind of approach improve and stretch the available resources that are available, be it funding, be it expertise, and so on, we recognize that it would also talk directly to those, if you like, that are primarily responsible for inefficient use of energy. Therefore, what has happened in relation to business is that over and above the 2005 Energy Efficiency Accord, the National Business Initiative has put together 43 companies, which companies have made new pledges in terms of which certain interventions are going to be made by industry. Chair, you might also appreciate that for most of these companies, it's not a feel-good, but it's a marketing thing. It's about being a responsible corporate citizen, and therefore we believe that they will take this thing very seriously. In fact, we have a program with them in terms of which, amongst other things, they will assist in the execution of the solar water heating program in lieu of some of the savings that need to be instituted by them. And their employees, for example, would form part of a program in terms of which they would facilitate the solar water heating rollout would be facilitated. Over and above their champ, the question around how we're going to cover the rest of the other municipalities with the solar water heating, the 19 municipalities with energy efficiency intervention, is also linked to what we're doing with business. So what we're doing is that we're bringing government contribution to the program, then we're saying what are from the fiscus, and then we're saying what do other stakeholders have to contribute towards the same program. And as an example, in Nelson Mandela, there is a particular pilot which involves business, ourselves as government, and also the local municipality to roll out the solar water heaters in a particular way. And that kind of pilot is targeted to be rolled out and throughout all the municipalities in the country, beyond the 19 that have already received the funding in the first round. Thanks.
We follow up that, because I think all the municipalities that you mentioned, noted at EFSA and Matibe, on the list you mentioned even Ekurhuleni, which part of the project is that with the, is it the one with the CEF or is it a separate one?
Yes, it is the one with CEF. In fact, only last week did we discuss how to take the whole process forward, because there had been some issues around the CEF project in Ekurhuleni. But that's the one, yes.
Okay. No, exactly, because I think it is wrong to come and say you've got these in the 19 municipalities, you want to expand others. The equivalent one in particular is not off the ground, is not yet being implemented at all. And that is what, I mean, we know. So I'm not sure now, if you put it like 19 municipalities, I was under the impression that the rollout or the pilot are working there in all the 19. But for that one, because I stay in Ekurhuleni, that's why I'm asking you, which one is it? The one in partnership with the municipality and the CF, that one is not working. And there's a big issue with that, because the CF has to come back to the committee and tell us. It was in their annual report, and they have to come and explain to us, because they were doing the same thing that you are doing, you know, reporting it as if it is a pilot project that is already working. It is not. It's still... is it not being implemented at all? So I'm not, I don't know the 19 number. What does that mean? Or it is these instances that you still have to work with them, or agreements, so on and all that. I'm not sure. Maybe even the EDI, because I see the CEO here. I'm sure they can assist us with some of the municipalities that they do know that they have these programs. If she has the knowledge of she can add, I'm sure, because they are also dealing with the municipalities from the EDI side. But please, just verify the information before you come and tell us, rather than us and you will be saying, no, this is not the case, whatever. It's better to say there's nothing. There's plans that we are eyeing and not having these things, right, because it is not true in some of the municipalities that they are rolling out these programs, zero. Does MOU signed, nothing.
So if I can just clarify that, Ekurhuleni is part of the fiscal program. We have allocated 3 million rands to Ekurhuleni in the previous financial year. The project that I'm referring to is a broad energy efficiency program, in terms of which they have retrofitted about 20,000 CFLs in municipal buildings. So that's the previous program, right, in the 19 financial year. What I was saying is that over and above the 19 municipalities that have been given money last year for energy efficiency programs, going forward in the 10-11, there is additional allocation of about 300 million rands, amongst which Ekurhuleni will be a beneficiary. No, Chair, what we do is we say energy efficiency programs, right, and the municipality gives us their proposal as to what they identify as low-hanging fruit. It's CFLs, it's street lighting, it's traffic lights, it's solar water heating, and usually they come back to us and say, you know, this is what we believe we can do under the circumstances. But over and above that, we're saying that we're wanting to have a program in partnership with the municipalities, the department, and business in order to roll out solar water heaters specifically. And in that particular program, we're going to be leveraging, for example, the SAP program, however advanced it might be.
Thanks, Jay. My question is the department considering any kind of tax incentives to businesses and households, rather than looking at taxation in the form of carbon taxes and so on? In other words, using a carrot rather than a stick, because I think that while there's lots of good things, they're all very superficial. And I think unless you give some serious incentive, you're not going to get the behavior change that you're looking for.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just would like to get some clarity on the sentence that they have here for municipalities to monitor electricity sales. That I just want to clarify that. I'm not sure of what you're talking about.
last question from myself. I think after all this, we would like to know, as of now, in terms of energy saving, what are we talking about thus far, the megawatts that we can talk to as of today or last year, rather than just to rest? We see the diagrams talking about actually what is the actual figure that we can talk about in terms of the megawatts and the energy saving.
The energy, in terms of the Energy Act, the minister is empowered to promulgate energy efficiency regulations with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance insofar as tax incentives are concerned. The process is underway. What my colleague reported here is that the draft regulation is out for public consultation, after which process, or rather parallel to which, the Minister of Finance must concur or has to consider concurrence, and then subsequent to that, the framework for tax incentives would be in place. So it is something that is very advanced at this point. Just in terms of the savings to date, Chair, we do have a slide there which indicates what the verified savings are to date. At this point, on a cumulative basis since 2003, it's sitting at 1,892 megawatt. And if you like, there is also a slide that indicates the performance of this financial year, which is a verified 70 megawatts year to date. Then my colleague will take that, the question around the meaning of the over that sentence. Chair, it is independently verified. There are certain measurement and verification protocols that are applied for the different technologies. And what happens is that an independent team gets appointed to verify the work that has been done by the energy services company. In fact, that is one of the issues, Chair, that we're wanting to firm up on by regulation, because we also recognize that particularly if you introduce tax incentives, SARS has indicated that they would want to have certainty about the number of megawatts that various entities are going to claim as having been saved. And in that regard, an independent measurement and verification framework is proposed under this new regulation, involving the SANAS, the South African National Accreditation System, the South African National Accreditation System under the Department of Trade and Industry. But that whole framework as to who verifies and what then would be taken as true, you know, savings is included in that regulation. I'm just a skeptical myself. You would recall that, or you might be aware that the dominant entity that does the intervention is Eskom at this point. When the EEGSM program started, it was solely under the leadership and direction of Eskom. So you had a referee player contradiction there. And we have at least managed to get a dispensation from within Eskom, in terms of which the ring fence, the entity that implements from the entity that that verifies. So there is some level of segregation of responsibility there. But Chair, first prize in order to remove all of this skepticism is to have a completely separate entity responsible for verification from the one that does the intervention, and that's what will happen in the regulation. So we are, to borrow from your expression, we are, I think you said a little bit, we medium chance.
I wanted to just come close by, but also just to amplify what the colleagues have said. Municipalities haven't picked up on the EE campaign in a manner that they could have. And the worrying thing is that we tend to hear a comment that says it's counterintuitive. If we implement in energy efficiency, we are selling less megawatts, therefore our revenue line gets affected. So there are those types of challenges that we're going to have to deal with as a country, as a sector, to make people realize that it doesn't help us to have an energy sector that's based on inflated figures. You know, rather let's readjust the base and come down and make sure that the revenue we're earning is sustainable into the future. So there is that particular challenge that we've picked up at BDI Holdings. We are aware that there are three provinces that have got serious energy efficiency campaigns: Gauteng, Western Cape, and Eastern Cape. Other provinces, they talk about it, and now that the pressure has gone, they've forgotten about it. But those three provinces have got over and above structures that deal with energy efficiency. They have got energy policies, and they're clear around what they're going to be doing around energy efficiency. Gauteng is particularly sharp because they've also chosen the type of implementation trajectories that they're going to be doing with municipalities. So, Chairperson, in general, the picture is not looking great, but I know that there's a big challenge of funding from national government. Municipalities are saying over and above, they're waiting for funding from national government. So in Negruleni, for instance, one of the areas of implementation other than the CFL rollout is the changing of street lights, the traffic lights in Negruleni. Most of the major arterials, if you look at them, they're solar powered with LEDs, you know, a bit like Joburg. But the feeling is also that people are not doing as much as they could. There's a lot more to be done. There's a big room for improvement around the implementation of energy efficiency in general. Thanks.
And the CFLs, are we manufacturing them now in South Africa, or we are still getting them from China? A little bit, or what?
There is a factory that's operational now in Lesotho, which the Central Energy Fund has taken. So some of it is being obtained from
one factory in Lesotho.
One factory in Lesotho, China. Otherwise, the rest comes from China.
In South Africa, zero here. No. Lesotho is another country. It's not in South Africa. We have a relationship. But it's part of the SACU, but they are a country on their own. Slav.
Chairperson, if you remember when we visited Mozambique recently, they spoke about some kind of energy saving globe, much more better than the CFL. Maybe it would be advisable that our DOE engage with them just to find out if indeed it would suffice to consider those kinds of blocks and include them into the mix here at home.
You mean the T5? Whatever I think.
They call it cheaper.
Something to that effect. I think it's, yeah. Which are better than the CFLs.
Yeah.
Energy wise.
They spoke about that. But also, I must take this opportunity to say the issue of publicity or awareness, as mentioned. Indeed, practically, it has been able to reach out to the better part of the people in the country. but the energy used in South Africa is actually skewed. You have a lot less CEO in the rural provinces. A lot less use of electricity as compared to in the urban area. And I wonder what would be the reason to worry much about saving what is little anymore. You know, if you talk about the province, I come from the northwest. Most of it is indigent. People depend on the electricity that you get, how many? 50, yeah? per month. There isn't much use of electricity there. What we should perhaps be addressing is how we make those provinces able to get sufficient electricity so that they can be able to, we can be able to have that problem to raise whether they are saving or not.
Just to clarify some of the questions raised by Mama T, in relation to the CFL, the picture on the screen shows you some of the examples of the CFLs that you have in the market. You also have those with double pins. Those are the type of CFLs that you would find in the market. In relation to what we meant with the program assisting municipalities in terms of the monitoring of the sales data, what we have learned is that most of the municipalities do not collect data in as far as electricity sales is concerned. They don't even have a system to collect that data. Now, as part of our monitoring progress, we want to bring them on board to say they have to, or we have to, together develop a system, a methodology that will also assist the municipalities, which eventually would be rolled out to all municipalities so that it can be used for them to monitor the sales of the electricity so that they can then be able to feed into the national monitoring system to assess the impact in as far as the consumption is concerned.
To other comment on what Honorable Slav alluded to. For example, in South Africa currently, we have a coverage, for example, in terms of grid electrification of about 80% overall currently. Last year, I remember, it was around about 75%. Now it's at about 80%. But then the issue then becomes that the paradigm that we're embracing as a country in terms of access, not to electricity as such, to energy. The what should then preoccupy us as we go forward is that how do they bring even off-grid means to ensure that people have access to energy? Because it's not only about connection to grid. Because, for example, we would agree that the load shedding that happened in 2005 awakened South Africa to the reality of that. In as much as we want, for example, to continue electrifying, which is an imperative, for example, for government, but then how do then ensure that, for example, in rural areas, for example, that what you're raising, we educate people that there are other means of accessing energy, as, for example, the CEO of ETI was alluding to the programs, for example, that, for example, you see in Nkurule, where, for example, for your traffic lighting, you have those solar panels and small wind devices. But basically, it's about South Africa now acknowledging the reality of saying that we must diversify our energy consumption from the level of a household so that we then reduce the burden on the grid and change the mindset that will then only define energy only in terms of grid electrification. Basically, this is what I wanted to say, Honorable Chair. I pause.
So, but overall, I think we need to do much better than what the report says, and encourage, I mean, a lot of people to follow suit. But we should also be exemplary as the parliamentarians. Start to check the parliamentary buildings, whether they're energy efficient. They've done something at the inner building, maybe better off now. So surely for parliament, we should also, as the Honorable Lucas indicated, that we need also to look at parliament as an institution and say it also it needs to be energy efficient. And also to encourage the members to practice as well saving energy at all costs, even in our constituencies. We should be the champions in any way, assisting the department. But I'm not sure in their unit how many people are working in this particular program. What is the number? 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And you expect to have a minimal impact throughout the whole country with the 8 people, really speaking. There's something that must be done, but also then we need to do much more and be able to be seen. And to revive the program, because I think it was alive, I mean, after the load shedding. If people are saying, you, we need to do something about it. And as much as you buy the electricity, but you must be able to save it. And all other forms of energy that do contribute, because we've got the responsibility in terms of the renewable energy overall. But in particular, just to inculcate the saving in terms of energy in our families, everywhere we go, I think that will add and make sure that we can have better, and also hoping that the framework on the verification and all that will also be beefed up, and I mean, we don't really guess or whatever, think this is the number and all that. So, I mean, there's much more work that we've got to do. Department, otherwise agencies that work with the department, including all of us, it means we've got a duty to be ambassadors of this and be champions and advocate this all the time. Okay. So I think we covered the subject, and we have to move on there because it seems members are satisfied with the question answer session and also suggestions. Am I correct to say that? All right. Okay. The second item is the briefing by the Energy Sector Education and Training Authority, etc. Honorable Dexter?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. I've just received an email from our office. They did send the apology to the secretary at 8:31 this morning. So you could ask them why they haven't forwarded it to you. Yeah.
We will check that. But I'm sure he was already here, Yena, checking everything is fine. You can stay on DOE. We don't chase you away when it is comes to CETA. There's tea, I think, that has been arranged for 11 o'clock, so I'm not sure whether members want to grab tea now, have a break, or you just want us to continue. You'll just get tea and come back. What is the proposal? Grab tea and come back, rather than to break. All right, that's what the members are saying. There's no time. we'll then hand over then to the Energy Sector Education Training Authority then to brief us, because I think as a committee we do have to create a relationship with the sector, because we believe that as we're checking or getting to know better some of the entities that work with CETAs are also part of those that said that we must then have some form of relationship. Hence, then invited them to tell us about their programs, etc., and all that. I'm not sure how long is the input? 30 minutes. No one.
These are intellectuals, Chair.
Intellectuals. They're still setting up, ne?
Yes.
Okay. I think then members can have just a 5-minute break and then we will come back. grab the two effects or give them right away.
Thank you.
You also want your figure to be okay.
Yeah, I'm battling, I'm losing.
I think we can proceed. There's more apologies that came. One is for Dexter. We verified with the office. It's fine. Discipline member of the committee. Dexter is not absent without an apology. So we have to record that. That's not the second tour already here at the time. And then there's an apology for Tinto. She's not feeling well, health-wise. And then apology from Chairperson of the Higher Education and Training Committee. We invited him because they are the one who are dealing with the status in any way. But we do have that particular subordinate relationship because you deal with the issues that you deal with as a committee in terms of the sector. Hence, then we invited him, but he then sent for the apology. He's also off sick. People are sick. Your Keta, what's wrong with Keta?
You guys from Kateng are not strong enough.
They're not strong enough. I mean, but that's the heart of the South African economy. At big Kateng, South African economy. Babies, too. Okay. All right, then. Can you then give them the chance for the energy sector, everything you do, the introduction, eh? And then just then move on, and then we'll make it possible. And there's some announcement then and invitation for the committee members. Okay, over to you, energy sector.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Nkruma Raymond Kahodi. I'm the chairperson of the CETA board. With me, I'm with the Chief Executive Officer, Funamna Mankai. And we are grateful on behalf of the board for having been accorded this opportunity. And we hope that we will be able to maximize the interaction with the Portfolio Committee on Energy from henceforth. I'm going then over to the CEO, who will then make a presentation on behalf of ICIC. Thanks. Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to take this opportunity and greet honorable portfolio committee members, also echoing the sentiments that have been shared by the Chairperson, that we are grateful that we have been accorded this opportunity to be able to come and make a presentation. And I believe that the introductory remarks that have been made by the Chairperson are quite very good in that we are indeed supposed to be coming from time to time and brief the portfolio committee with the issues that are driving skill development within the energy sector. I've been given a brief to come and present the energy CETA vision and mission, and also to update the portfolio committee with regards to the achievements that have been made to date, and as we progress, so what is it that we are planning to do going forward. The Energy CETA Chairperson is in terms of the vision, we regard ourselves as a leading facilitator of the world-class skills for energy and water. In terms of the demarcations that have been given to Energy CETA, we are also are expected to facilitate education and training within the water sector as well. So we've got these two sectors that we work with closely. Our mission is to facilitate skill development for energy and water sector stakeholders through providing integrated, value-added education and training services. In terms of our legal mandate, we are driven by the Skills Development Act, and the subsectors that we operate within are as follows. Within energy, we have renewable energy, we have nuclear, we have gas, lastly electricity as broad areas that we need to cover in terms of facilitation of skills development in the areas. Within water, we have subsectors there, sanitation, waste management, water distribution, water catchment, and water recirculation and purification. The constituencies or constituents that participate in the governance of Energy CETA, we have labor and employer. We have unorganized labor. We have IMATU, we have NEUSA, we have NUMSA, we have NUM, Solidarity, SAMU, and SAIWA. Those are labor representatives that are participating in the board of Energy CETA. With regards to employers, we have ECA, called the Electrical Contractors Association, ESCOM, WISA, Water Institute of South Africa, ESCOM, and we also have a BEE component, which was historically for energy subsector. We also have SALGA, NERSA, South African Association of Water Utilities, and Nexa being the employer components of the composition of the board of Energy City. And we also have, in terms of the skills development as well, that we need to have government departments that are strategically aligned to these sitters. Ours are, I think you have been correctly put, the Department of Energy. We have the Department of Public Enterprises because of the closeness of ESCOM with this department in particular. We have also the Department of Water Affairs, and lastly, the Department of Human Settlement, due to the fact that the sanitation component of the water sector has now been moved over to this new department. The governance structure of Energy City is as follows. We have the accounting authority, which is the board. We have the executive committee that looks at day-to-day running of the organization. And over and above that, we also have the audit committee, which looks at audit function of the city and also the risks that are identified from time to time, but it's not actually structured in the presentation. Over and above that, we also have what we call functional committees, which are composed of skills development committee. We also have quality assurance committee and learning programs committee. Those three key committees are actually the heart of the organization in terms of driving issues of skills development, because the processes that we're engaged in are quite very participatory in nature. So we always rely on these functional committees to be able to drive the issues of skills development in the two sectors that I've mentioned earlier on. We also have Water Chamber. Water Chamber, and be based on the fact that we also have the Department of Water Affairs that we work with. So they are organized, highly organized in terms of a chamber. We also are expected to have an energy chamber now because of the new landscape that has been given to us. But this has not been finalized. We are in a process to make sure that at least there are two chambers that are going to drive issues of skills development in the two sectors that I made mention of earlier on. In terms of the CETA operations, we have a very mean structure which looks at various areas that I made mention of. We've got HR and marketing as a leading department with regards to issues of human resources staff and related matters. We also have the learning program division, which is meant by manager as well, but its primary function is to really ensure that there are skills development programs that are identified and developed. There are learnerships, there are artisan programs that are developed to also make sure that ultimately employers are contracting learners to participate in the skills development processes. We also have ETQA, which is called Education, Training, and Quality Assurance. I believe that members of the portfolio committee would remember that we used to have a situation where in our country, we used to have quite a number of fly-by-night training institutions which were just not accredited. Now, the South African Qualifications Authority, as one of their mandates, is to make sure that we get accredited as a CETA to participate in that. And what we then do as well, we make sure that we accredit people that are providing education and training. So we're trying to eliminate an element of those fly-by-night training institutions so that our people are not taken for a ride. We have a Water Chamber coordinator. We have an SSP manager. SSP is about research and development, making sure that we have scarce and critical skills that are clearly identified for us to be able to, in the quest to make sure that the learnerships that we're talking about are demand-led as opposed to how things used to be done in the past. So that division is actually responsible for that. Lately, we have also appointed services of a corporate governance manager looking at the governance program that we have in the CETA, we have been quite a number of committees, but we never had a situation where we are able to coordinate in a seamless way the activities and the functions of these committees, such that meetings are well attended, people make follow-ups on those meetings, and the participants of those meetings need to be, you know, from time to time, really being pushed to participate in those functional committees, including the board and executive committee. What we are now doing is that we have appointed the services of this person for us to be able to lessen the burden on the CEO to be able to run with those activities. We also have the acting chief financial officer, which is by and large responsible for disbursement of grants and making sure that there is a proper financial management of the institution. Then the rest will be, you know, supporting staff members within the key areas that have been made mention of. But I must actually stress that the structure of the organization is quite very mean, and that also tends to create a little bit of challenges with regards to us, you know, implementing what we want to implement, given the fact that we are a national institution that is supposed to be looking at everybody, including the dark corners of our country. So we need to penetrate and be able to be seen, to be visible, something that we really need to, we're grappling with, and we need to make sure that we address going forward. Chairperson, with regards to the financial stability of the organization, I'm just giving you a snapshot of our financial income since from 2006, that is in the last NSDS2. We are very small, we are a very small sector compared to others. In 2006, for instance, we had an income of about 93 million. I will actually explain to you going forward as to how this money gets divided into various substructures within the CETA. When you look at this, you realize that we are now almost at, you know, in 2009, for instance, we received an income of about 124 million. As we move, you'll be able to also appreciate the fact that when chemical sector comes and makes a presentation, you need to look at what we have against what they have as well, in a sense that our income sometimes are not sufficient or are not equal. We cannot be able to be seen to be doing the same, you know, in addressing the challenges that we have. Currently, we have a total of about 147,951,000, the total income, excluding the inter-sector transfers, because sometimes what happens is that some employers are registered with wrong sectors, and we need to transfer and redress or reverse those receivables that we normally need to make sure that those monies get paid back to the sectors that these employers are linked with. What then happens is that the sector is divided into three categories in terms of the levy income. We have what we call admin income. In this instance, we have about 19 million rand that we need to do or operate within to make sure that we do what we're supposed to be doing with regards to administration of the organization. That would talk to the day-to-day running of the CETA, travel, bookings, salaries, stationery, all those are legislated in terms of what we can be able to spend, such that we don't use money that are meant for learners or training out there. It must be money that is actually earmarked for training. It must go for training, not for administration and other stuff related to administrative issues. We also have what we call discretionary grant income, that which is also legislated in terms of the board, where we would have projects that we need to be present to the board of Energy CETA, and those projects get approved. And that is in the discretion of the board that certain projects actually fly, due to the fact that we need to make sure that we comply with the Public Finance Management Act. So the accounting authority is solely responsible for that. Lastly, we have what we call mandatory income, the one which stipulates payments of certain amounts of money that is currently to the tune of 91 million rand. It goes to employers that have met a criteria after having submitted a workplace skills plan / annual training report That is also regulated. You cannot do anything about that money. It's a ring-fenced money that needs to go to employers who actually would meet a criteria that has been approved in terms of the regulations of the Department of Higher Education. So the three categories form the total levy income of the FITA that we operate in. In terms of the projects, Chairperson, we last year we had a project with an organization which is called Tabombeki Development Trust, which is aimed at facilitating or organizing people with disabilities. What we then did, because we were actually piloting the process, the project, we felt so excited about it in a sense that it became very exciting project. We had to make sure that we assist with that. And we had a tune of about 5 million rands that we used to train the learners in that category. But what we also want to do going forward is we need to make sure that we have a constant and consistent relationship with that category for us to be able to really to be seen to be doing something. And when you look at the numbers, you think that no, this is just really a drop in the ocean. But we're looking to make sure that we increase the figures, you know, going forward. And those learners that we had were in the both water and electricity disciplines at an entry-level learnership. We wanted to prepare those learners for them to take technical skills or areas within the companies that we have, for instance, water sector companies like Groundwater actively participated in there, and also Eskom is actually aiming to be able to participate and assist us in ensuring that we really capacitate that category of grouping within the South African context. In terms of other achievements, we also have had a collaboration with the Department of Education Northwest, we actually partnered with them. We have to date trained about 2,000 learners in the area. We identified about 26 rural areas in that area, in the Northwest Province, where we ensured that, for instance, we coordinate and facilitate the training of those learners in those areas in what we call LCONOP 2 training. It's a skills program training which is aimed at making sure that our people get basic training for making sure that they do basic electrical wiring in schools and churches. So we have actually participated in that, and we have assisted the Northern Province, the Northwest Province in that category. With regards to other projects that we have, we had a Loiso project which was concluded in 2009, December. The total number of learners that we wanted to train in there was about 550. And in terms of achievement, we are at 68%. The total figure of about 373 learners that were taken through various qualifications like your electrical engineering in construction, wastewater process operations, water recirculation services, and an internship in electrical engineering, which was by and large agreed upon between us and Eskom to take people for practical training in those categories. The other achievements that we've made to date, Chairperson, I've just put in the indicators. It means that 2.7 to us, we have the service level agreement with the Department of Education. 2.7 means that is an added training. The target that we have put ourselves was about 50,080 for the past 5 years. In terms of the achievement, we are at 3,482 to be exact with regards to where we are. But also note the fact that we have not concluded the final financial year. And therefore, this coming financial year, we need to make sure that the achievement is actually reached in terms of the target that we have put ourselves. The 2.8 means the employers that are, employees that are in their current employment, in the factories, in the shop floors. We had a target of 2,745. To date, we have achieved more than what we have actually put aside. We have trained about 5,099 in the last 5 years with regards to that category. 4.1, we are talking about unemployed learners, people that we take from the street.
Sorry, Chair. Can you perhaps say to us as you go along, you have trained these people on what? If you say you have trained 5,099, what have you trained them on?
Okay, I will explain that going forward, Chair.
Thank you.
We also have the 4.2 target with the Department of Education there. We're talking about training of people in making sure that we place them for them to get practical training. And also we need to also have a joint collaboration with higher education or further education such that people that are coming from practical employment can actually go and get experience with the employers in the workplaces. Lastly, we have what we call new venture creation learnerships. Those are the learnerships that are aimed at crafting people to be able to get to open their own businesses. So we need to support them on that. The target that we have is about 188. We are at 132 currently with the Department of Higher Education. As an E2A that I actually referred to earlier on, that we need to have a very close link with the South African Qualifications Authority. We have been closely working together with them, and they've actually been monitoring our activities with regards to the quality of training that is taking place within the sector. That they've actually given us a green indicator status, meaning that we are within the realistic and recognizable level with regards to the update of what they call National Learner Record Database, where all the certificates that we issue, all the learners that have actually completed a particular qualification, they are all uploaded into that, such that everybody will be able to be accessed in the SAQA website to get to ensure that there is quality of training that takes place. We've also, with regards to SAQA in particular, we also have a green indicator status with regards to the performance of what is expected of us with SAQA, with regards to quite a number of other things, which I did not actually make mention of in the slide. The last thing is that we have also retained our quality assurance status with SAQA. We are going to have the status up until the 26th of September 2011. So what is then going to happen is that they do come and conduct audits to find out as to whether are we still up to scratch with regards to what is expected of us going forward. Chairperson, I'm referring to the, when you look at the figures that I have in here, as we have qualifications and titles of the certificates that we have issued to date. The honourable member wanted to find out as to what is it that you have trained people on. I must make mention of the fact that we have a qualification which is called Certificate in Electrical Engineering. These are learnerships, by and large, from NQF level 1 to 4. The cumulative figure thereof is about 5,524, and we're talking about tangible, hard certificates that we've issued in the country, and it's actually cut across all the provinces that you can, across the 9 provinces that we have in the country. We also have national certificate in power plant operation within NQF level 3 to 5. To date, we have about 1,282 learners that were certificated cumulative. That is a cumulative figure since 2000 when we actually started. And the figure actually would vary with regards to the number of qualifications. We have some qualifications we're really not able to get good figures, in the sense that some are highly specialized figures, highly specialized qualifications, which really need certain kind of people. fact that when you look at, for instance, the National Certificate in Electrical Engineering, that's a basic which we really need to make sure that we address in the country. There's a very high shortage of electricians in the country. So we need to really make sure that our budget tries and address the national imperatives of the country with regards to what the government wants to do. We also have national certificates in water and sanitation. Those are just certificates that were issued for the water sector. All in all, with regards to the certificates that we've issued, is about 8,184 as a cumulative figure. We also have what we call, in terms of Manpower Training Act, Section 13 and Section 28. Those are trade test certificates that we normally issue after having had a collaboration with, we used to call it court in the park, now it's called Indela at Olifantsfontein. After having, these are artisan figures that we have in the country. Cumulatively, we have achieved 1,109 in the trade test, in particular electricians that would go through a training of about 3 years, in a 3 year cycle. A person gets certificated on the basis of him or her being able to meet certain criteria that is put. To date, we have a cumulative figure of about 11,488 national qualification certificates that are issued by Energy Sita since the inception. We are also dependent on what we call registered assessors and moderators that are supposed to be facilitating education and training within the fields that I've made mention of earlier on. To date, we have about 3,295 assessors which are registered by Energy Sita. We also have about 442 moderators that we have funded and certificated to ensure that we get a lot of facilitators to be able to assist us with training, facilitation of education and training within the field that I've made mention of. The other, it's also related to Manpower Training Act as well. We have about 1,698 electrical single-phase testers, which we have certificated as a fit as well. Installation electricians, we have 1,068 to date. And also master installation electricians, we have about 21. That is also another highly specialized area, which, people, it's an add-on to what they have after having met the basic of becoming an artisan. So to total to date is 2,787. Chairperson, I'm not going to bore you with the list of these qualifications that I've actually made mention of earlier on, but we have, as a CETA, registered, developed and registered all these qualifications. These are water-related. It's water and wastewater restoration, NQF level 2, the list is quite endless. I'm not going to make mention of that, but people will be able to read if there is an interest with regards to certain learnerships and qualifications. That's still water, and those are that's the list of, including skills programs as well. Chairperson, we also have managed to develop quite a lot of those skills programs, and we implement them in terms of making sure that we contract employers and providers to train our learners in those developed areas, skill programs and learnerships. This is energy sector qualifications and learnerships that we have developed, and we are in the process of implementing them. Measurement, control, and instrumentation, these are by and large, when you look at them from 2 to 5, it's normally ESCOM that actually participate in that. Power plant auxiliary systems, those are fossil, nuclear, hydro. Those are areas that ESCOM participate heavily on. But we've actually been able to assist them to make sure that these qualifications and learnerships are available for them to take people through to get capacity as well. With regards to the challenges that we have, I've just made mention of about four, which I believe are quite very important going forward as an organization. which we're grappling with. One main is the one on governance, where we have a board which is expected to drive issues of skills development by monitoring and evaluating the work that we do as operations. But the challenge that we are faced with is that, you know, boards lately, most of them get paid in terms of the stipends for them to be able to, we need to incentivize them to be able to assist us to drive issues of skills development. But because this is a voluntary exercise, it's difficult for you to get 100% support and assistance. So based on the levy income that we operate within, it's difficult for us to be able to really come to the party and appreciate the work that the board of Energy City is doing. They also have their own employment somewhere, but sometimes we want them to participate as if they are also full-time in the work that we're doing, even though they're governance and they're supposed to be overseeing the work that we do. But sometimes the work is such that it allows or it demands of them to participate actively. We only pay for travel only and nothing else. We are in a process of trying to really relook at the capacity that Energy City has with regards to the personnel that we need to have for us to be able to drive issues of skills development. I made mention of the fact that earlier on that we really need to be seen to be all over. Energy City only has two regional offices. So we are grappling with making sure that we need to be visible in all the regions, in all provinces. We need to have a footprint. So that's another challenge that we're faced with, looking at the number. When you count the heads of the staff members that we have, you'll realize that really we are quite very small as an organization. And the other process or challenge that we're faced with, we actually had appointed services of a new management information system for us to enhance our administrative processes. There's quite a lot of paper that we're pushing in the organization, so we really need to make sure that we don't falter on that. There's quite a number of things that we're supposed to be doing. So we are in a process of enhancing our administrative processes as an organization to make sure that we maximize the output at the end of the day. Lastly, in terms of I'm saying that we really need to be seen to be delivering on the quality learning outcomes. What normally happens is that there's a relationship that we have with regards to the three divisions that I spoke about. We have what we call a learning program department that is responsible for development of learnerships, development of skills programs to drive issues of ABET training in the sector. But that needs to be informed by the research that needs to be conducted on a constant basis for us to be able to make sure that we identify and develop relevant learnerships that are going to be assisting government with regards to scarce and critical skills. And lastly, the issues of quality education and training, they also are important in the sense that we really need to make sure that we don't give our people second-grade training. We need to make sure that every time, when a person says, I've got an Energy City certificate, it means that the person is guaranteed to get employment at the end of the day. So that's what we also are striving for as an organization, that we just need to shy away from training for the sake of training. Training must be informed by a need at a particular time. So also, we need to make sure that is addressed, you know, going forward. We have a new proposed landscape for the next cycle, Chairperson, which is driven by the Department of Higher Education. What we are saying in this one, we are saying as a sector, we need to make sure that we improve performance and quality of training. I spoke about this as a challenge in the past, but we need to make sure that we have processes and systems that would make sure that the performance, really, we up the bar with regards to issues of performance and the quality of training that we provide our people. We also are saying we are definitely going to make sure that we adhere and implement corporate governance related matters in the city. The fact that we also we were having a challenge, we did not address this. There's a person that now we have appointed to be able to drive issues of corporate governance, to work closely with our board, to work closely with the executive committee, also to work closely with and the audit committee and the functional committees like your SSP, learnerships, and the E2QA department and committee meetings to make sure that those are really addressed, you know, going forward. We are also committing ourselves in making sure that we have you know, we respond, we improve our response times. Now that we are mostly a national organization, we get inundated with quite a number of queries. That needs to change in a sense that we need to address those. Our turnaround time must be you know, addressed and must be looked at. We need to make sure that we are efficient in addressing the queries that our people on the ground or have with regards to issues of learnership, be it issues of certification, be it issues of funding that is supposed to be transferred to those employers and to those providers that are assisting energy sector in facilitation of the skills development. And our management response, those are actually talking to exactly the same principle around the fact that both board, both management, and lastly staff must be able to have a culture that says Ubuntu principle is important, and Batupi, the principle must also be advanced in all respects going forward. The board, we really need to also entice and make sure that they also get capacitated. We know that we are a very small organization. We cannot be able to take them to training all the time, but the basic things that the board members need to be indicted upon are the things that we need to also look at. And subsequently, on an annual basis, we need to conduct the performance of the board assessment. That is also very important. Risk management is another element or area that we also need to enhance our performance on to ensure that ultimately we address the issues of Public Finance Management Act. The Department of Education now talks about the sector skills plan document as being the driver of skills development and implementation. So what we need to do, our alignment of the SSP that we have would ensure that we enhance quality of training. We also enhance the number of learners that need to get out of the conduit, so to speak. Chairperson, we also have a very close relationship with certain stakeholders, but we are saying those stakeholders are quite very much strategic to us. We also need to look at what imperatives are they driving, what government initiatives are they. With ESCOM, we know we are actually in close relationship with them around the project that we want to assist them with. Water service providers, for instance, we have an element of our active engagement with the things that they want to do. You know, issues like sanitation, for instance. With governments, there's quite a number of those government departments that we feel we need to really work closely with. One of those is the Department of Public Enterprises that drives the solar heating, solar water heating program. Department of Energy, we are working closely with the. We made a presentation last time to the executive committee at the Department of Energy, where we made presentations with regards to what is it that they want us to assist them with regards to issues of skill development, quality assurance, and matters. But there is a very close relationship that is actually existing now, thanks to the leadership of Department of Energy around those issues of skill development. Department of Water Affairs as well, we're working closely with them. They are also participating in our board. Lastly, the Department of Human Settlement, we still need to have a way of our engagement with them, you know, going forward, to make sure that we are also on par with what they're expected to get from us as an organization. The project that I spoke about, ESCOM has what we call the new build project. What we have gone to them to request was give us a breakdown of the learners that you are going to have, you know, going forward to address the issue of the new build project that you have. Already we are in discussion with them around that, with also solar heating. So we really need to go out of the way in making sure that we really address, you know, issues of rainwater harvesting and the green economy. And lastly, what we are also looking at now is to move away from, we have been doing the basics as an organization, where we would train learners and learnerships on the basic, you know, entry level. But we also want to up the bar, Chairperson, to also look at the international leadership programs that other cities are actually beginning to participate in the sense that we have been inundated with requests and applications that are coming from the sector, in particular the energy, where they would say we need basic stuff. We cannot be able to have a situation where we are entertaining international leadership programs, whereas we still are, you know, having a gap in addressing the basic stuff. So going forward, I believe that we will be able to put some money aside and actually begin to say, what about those that have gone beyond NQF level 4? What is it that you are going to do with them? Because those people, I believe, that they are also interested in enhancement of training. Chairperson, thank you very much for the time. We'll entertain questions. My chairperson will also assist in the event where there are questions of clarity that are coming from the portfolio committee members. Thank you.
You refer the difficult one to the chair and take the easy one. All right. So thank you very much for the information. I think you are much more informed now as to your operations, what you do, which departments you interact with, including our own that you oversight. But I'm also, I hope the energy sector is not one of the four that have been put under administration. If not, or you also under administration?
Well, Chair, we are one of the sectors that have received a Section 15 letter from the Minister. We have not yet received a formal response from the Minister of Irrigation in regards to the response that the Board has submitted to the Minister. However, in terms of the public media, we are cited as one of the sectors affected.
Okay. All right. Can we then allow members for questions, clarity? Nobody give the members first, then come afterwards. Flau, Matibela, and Dexter, Jigelana, and then Lucas. In that order.
Chairperson, there is a lot, but we will try and stay because it is the first meeting. Subject clarity on a number of things. That slide that was referring to the Tabombeki development and the Northwest Province relationship in November. This collaboration that we did in the Northwest, all the standard skills program. How many children and where are they? Do you make reference there to 2,000 learners for people who are disabled? All right, that is understood. Or that ELCONOP 2 electrical skills program. Have they just been trained and been dumped somewhere and forgotten, or is there a particular plan for them? That is the first question. My second question would be the training target. We've just seen in your slide there figures of your target and what you have achieved. Some of what you have achieved was accumulated from 2000 and whether the targets are annually or the targets are also from 2000, it's unclear. But also, what informs that those targets? How do you arrive at those figures? How do you say you need to target so many people? Is it financial, or is it capacity problem, or is it assessment or research of what is required in the country? The capacity of the board to do full-time job. What's the composition of the board? Is it? Are you talking here of an executive board, or are you talking about the board with the executive functions elsewhere? And I would assume the fact that you have a CEO means the executive functions. It's not in the board. But let me leave it for you to clarify. The issue relating to operation, your ability to reach out. It looks like in your presentation you're saying the problem would be resolved by getting more people in order to be able to reach out to bigger areas. But I know of a lot of areas where people are able to operate from an operating center and reach out to the entire country without necessarily having to have people all over in the area. But if you think differently, what is your intention? Do you visualize a scenario where you have provincial offices of the CETA, regional offices and local offices, or what? The other question is the issue of the needs for training. Training for the need or the need to train. Whether such research has been made, whether your training is informed by the need, and if so, whose need? The minister's budget made reference to what you have put forward there. There was one slide. In which slide you're talking about your vision to 2016. That slide refers to a number of things that we heard from the minister's budget speech. But one important element that we have not raised in your relationships just from the beginning up to the end has been that the minister is of the view that the CETA, this Education and Training Authority, must be related or linked to the product that you produce from the university and training colleges education, and both of these products must be linked to the needs of the country socially, economically, and politically. That's what the minister is looking at. But I haven't heard, in whatever you said here, any relationship with the universities and other training colleges, the FET, if I would say. Maybe you can be able to give us some light there. And linked to that, is that what informs then your programs? How do you arrive at the programs of education that you develop? Thanks for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable Slow nearly took everything, because my question was going to be, I see on the 2011-16 slide that they're going to improve the training. And for the years that they have been training, we saw the numbers that they have produced. My question was going to be, what happens to those people after qualifying? And the other part of it was that employers were contacted, and which means you were also training employees who belong to other companies. Because my question was going to be, if we've got so many people being trained, and yet we are still, the departments are still suffering of scarce skills in the departments, and also where people are leaving South Africa to other countries because of the money that they are getting. I just wanted to hear that. And the other problem that we are having, since 1994, people have been trained in all sorts of things like water engineering and so on. But up to now, we still rely on white engineers for water. The country is in crisis today due to water, and the answer that we get from people is that the municipalities is that we don't have enough engineers. So I just want to know what CETA is doing. I think. Thank you, Chester.
Thanks, Chair. I must say it's quite a comprehensive presentation, so it gives us a lot of information. But what I'm interested in, which I don't require an answer now, but I'd like them to supply us with this information, is... Sorry, it's not this one. That I think what I'd like to know is these indicators that we're given. Can we drill down into them a little bit? Now, I'll give you two examples. What is the skill shortage? And what is the target that has been set? And when will we achieve at least some real progress in terms of those skill shortages? Like you've used the example of electricians. But I mean more generally. I think the achievements are quite clear in terms of numbers. But what's more significant is also what is it costing to train somebody? And what's the opportunity cost? And what's the benefit to the economy? Because if you're spending R1 million a year to train somebody, then that person is trained for 7 years, goes to work in the economy, but only earns R200,000 a year. It doesn't make sense. So I don't want the answers now, but that kind of information which gives us a more substantive feel about the work that the CETA is doing. Because sometimes the numbers can be, you can say, oh, well done, you've trained so many electricians. But the question is, are they having the kind of impact we need in the economy?
Thanks, Chair. Let me just also acknowledge the report and its incisiveness, and also at the same time reinforce Honorable Dexter's last point, impact assessment. Outcomes are one thing, but the impact is also very important. Also, Chair, I wanted to check on training programs on renewable and nuclear energy. I see they still in. If I get it, the CETA still intends looking into that. But a few additional questions then to those which have already been asked, is that what does the energy sector see as its ideal budget and its ideal training target? I know that the SLAW did ask it, you know, but I'm just strengthening that from a different angle, you know. You see, I see you've got 147 million friends with your budget, but I'm still provoking that. What do you see as an ideal budget? Just out of interest. You made reference to discretionary programs and projects. One is still not clear. Can you give us a little bit of detail or maybe examples, you know, on the discretionary programs? If I got to correct you, you made reference that your working relations with the Department of Human Settlements is either slack, low, or absent. I don't know whichever term is appropriate. Why? Because obviously, Chair, that's one of the most interesting things for us. I mean, if you build houses, then there should be energy planning as part of that. You know, and listen to Tugagemanje, if there is that slackness, if I can use the term, between this and the department, assuming that the sitters are always there to add, supplement, and complement what is already being done by FET colleges, universities, and in other centers or institutions of learning and training. But still, one would have assumed that you also would become a handy instrument as the rollout of housing goes throughout the country. I'll reinforce Honorable Slau's question around FET. I was very keen as well. So you must know that it's not only him, but a couple of us are keen to know your working relations with FET colleges. The last one is that, realizing that you have quite a number of partners, a little bit of a complex arrangement, do you have any strategy on partnership arrangement? Because at times, even if you're within one government, at times you guys tend to have empire, you know, building and TEF protection and this and that. And given that your area is very strategic, I mean, energy generally, energy supply, and therefore skills needed for energy become even crucial. Have you worked out any strategy on how you can manage your partnership? The partnerships, rather. Thanks, sir.
It's always good to come last because most of the questions are asked. But, you know, I was a bit concerned about the quality you were going to turn out because it looks at the lower ranges of literacy, housing, you're doing very well. But then you're saying again you need specialized sections. I'm worried. I'm more concentrated in that section because for years our people have been doing digital work, but they didn't have a Wyman's license, so they couldn't pass a building. So they were restricted from entering into the industry because they could just be work people. And so I think that needs to be improved. The other thing that I think we all find difficulty is when you talk about government and then you say solar, water, heating, and you only put the DPE, because the DOE is also involved in this year. So I think there's a bit of a problem. We all suffer from this. It needs to be opened up. Thank you.
Okay, and I'm sure just the skills thing, it just links with the skills and mismatch, I think, because they ask it slow and Dexter. But that's just to say, within the sector, how are you addressing that issue? Because it's part of the education and training, I'm sure, anyway. But that's the you mentioned the departments, energy, public enterprise, water affairs, and human settlement. What is your relationship with those departments? Has it been established, or are you working together with them, or whatever? Because ESCOM seems to be more that you're working with in terms of all those people. But in terms of placements, where largely are your placements? Because that is a key issue. After training, spending money, you achieve your targets. On some, your targets were overachieved, but at the end of the day, the question that was the gist of what the questions are, impact and where and how many people have been placed. If so, then you might be able then to add. But that's a key issue, I think, of the CETAS, taking from GIPSA and now the human resource development as part of the program. Where are we, and are we winning in this particular? Not forgetting that you mentioned that your boards, I mean, people are working on a voluntary basis. You give them stipends for transport. But overall, what is it then that is there? In your numbers, you don't mention maybe how many women, youth were trained and all that. It's just the numbers that are flat and I'm sure we know the majority of those people who need more training is the youth, I'm sure. So I'm not sure in this training what the target is and the race and all that. If possible.
Just take the very first one that just came from Ms. Hatshepard. With regards to the relationship that we have with the government department, I must say that we have a very close and good relationship with the Department of Energy. They also participate in the board of the CETA. We have a very good relationship with the Department of Water Affairs. They also participate in the Board of Energy in other functional committees as well. We have the guys, for instance, from Energy, Costas and Delicious, who is sitting in the SFP committee. We have Mr. Bansijang, who is one of the directors of the Department of Energy, who also participates in the Energy Board. In that, it's actually highly formalized. We also have the Department of Public Enterprises participating in the board and executive committee. Those three key departments, we are well represented in terms of, you know, them participating. With the Department of Human Settlement, I think I'm also trying to kill some of the points that were raised by Honorable Member Jigalana, for instance, around the human settlement, that we have just had or formalized a relationship with them. We still need to craft our relationship. But what we do have is that because there was one person who came from the Department of Water Affairs who was participating in the water chamber, we have just adopted that person, but it's not highly formalized. We still need to, so that we can be able to also tease out some of the projects that we want to engage them on. So we are in the process of doing that. The reason why I'm making mention of that is that really there's nothing happening there, you know, in terms of documentation that is there, but there's a process to make sure that we address that. And with regards to numbers, I think I need to come back to the portfolio committee and give you the breakdown with regards to the youth, people with disabilities, and women, to say where are we with regards to those projects. I just gave broad figures, because the other thing is that we really needed to look at the kind of, or the complexion of the portfolio committee and what kind of information do they really want us to give them. Because sometimes you want to make sure that you give them exactly what they are looking for. But we'll be able to provide that kind of information going forward. The points that were raised earlier on by the Honourable Member from Northwest, we have to date trained to the excess of 2,000, you know, learners in the Elcon of training. What normally happens in that is that this is a practical training that is offered on the job. When people do wiring, they identified schools that needed electricity. Then they were just given training on that. It's a 5-week training program. But what happens, it's highly informed in terms of what is it that they expect you to achieve. What the department then does, they ensure that certification process takes place. But what we have actually embarked upon when we graduated the last lot, we committed ourselves into going back to the department
and have case of studies around that to find out exactly where these people are, such that we also have pathways around those that would want to exceed, so that we would actually take over, add on to the minimum qualification that they have. That ultimately the aim would be to put them into NQF level 2, NQF level 3, ultimately they get a qualification. So we don't leave them in the list. But now the unfortunate situation that we find ourselves is that there's a lot of anxiety and excitement. People really want to be seen to be doing something, and we keep on talking and talking. Our capacity is not able. We're not able to do the things that we want to do. But in terms of our commitment, we definitely need to go back and follow up on that honourable member. The issue of the figures, what informs figures that we have and the targets, SLA, we have a relationship or a contract with the Department of Higher Education now through the what we call service level agreement. They come with a predetermined figures and say these are broad figures. Please take what you can be able to afford. So it's more on what you can be able to afford than anything else, because you work within stringent, very tight budget. So your figures must be informed by the need. What the sector field plan document is telling you in terms of what needs to be achieved at a particular time. And I think the point that has been raised by Honorable Director as well around the I think Mr. Ntigala also talked about that we really need to do the impact assessment. That's quite a very important point. It's on the card. One of the things that the Department of Higher Education is talking about now is around that in particular, to say we can't just train for the sake of training. Let's go back and find out as to what impact are we making in terms of rent and cents as well, and the time that we put towards the training of our people. That will keep us really on the ball with regards to that, to avoid a situation where we train a lot of people and we don't know where they're going. One point which is quite very key and crucial, and I admit that we really did not touch on it here in the slides, was the relationship that we're supposed to be having with the Department of Education or Higher Education with regards to FET colleges and universities. We are indeed in close relationship. As a result, we have planned to have a close relationship. We have a summit which is planned towards the end of September. Because the minister is actually on us around that, to say you really need to make sure that we work closely. What we do have in the sector skills plan document, we also talk about the work that is done through FET colleges, that if there are qualifications that they also want us to help them to accredit, we have that close relationship. Where I would also come back and give you figures when it comes to the number of FET colleges that we have collaborations with, because we also have MOUs with the colleges to drive certain areas of skills development, because really they are our partners in this. Even the minister lately, what they are doing, all the meetings that we attend, they always make sure that FET colleges are in attendance as well. So there's that close relationship that is getting a momentum currently. Sebastian, you want to?
I'm going to add in regard to respond to some of the questions. The other CEO has responded to the Northwest project. The discussions that we had, I think in 2008-2009, was that what we intend to do in regards to those learners who have been trained, that we need to see how do we take them further into other programs and interventions. An example is the following, that those who may have any interest, we must formulate an NBC and that we've taken into NBC programs, which means those are those particular learners who may aspire to be small contractors. And then part of the master project might be able to have that particular component. Some of those learners who may have any interest to take further studies or training in electrical engineering-related fields, also they must be earmarked for that. So the essence is that we have created a pool of persons who've got a basic training thereby, in rural area in particular. And thereby we need to see how we take them further into various training projects. One of the issues that was discussed and debated was that we need to look into various projects of ESCOM. So instead of ESCOM looking elsewhere, we need to see how they can take some of these partner learners with basic training. Either some of them are taken into to artisan programs, and others are given the actual workplace training. But the essence is that we need to ensure that there is a particular upward mobility instead of them having just ELCONOP training, ELCONOP 2 program. And what I'm saying in regards to taking people beyond NQF level 3 and 4 is what informs the strategic thinking of the board. Surely because of the previous year, I think the essence was to, for us to create a pool of persons who got NQF level 1 up until NQF level 4. Thereby, you're able to take persons up to either master's or PhD level, such that areas where there's an extreme shortage of skills, we are able to address that. In light also of the current policy direction in regards to the energy demand within the sector, the nuclear energy also being considered, the renewable energy also being considered, those inform specialized area, thereby they demand a specialized skill. So what we are saying in essence is that we have, to some extent, created a pool of persons who've got qualifications up until NQF level 4. Now, what should inform the teacher strategy is to target some of those particular trained persons and encourage them to take further so that we're able to address some of the policy imperatives. I think the CEO have responded to the training target issue that is primarily informed by the service level agreement that is, that is designed by the Department of Higher Education and Training presented to CETA negotiators. The financial capability of CETA will, at the end of it, dictate as to what can CETA commit itself to deliver. And so when you make comparisons, I mean, CETA, we have received, I think this particular financial land, $147 million. And that is broken down into close to $60 million for mandatory grants. That, by in terms of legislation, must be disbursed to employers. We are thereby left with close to $20 million or so that must be spent on special projects. And it is through special projects that we are able to address some of these particular strategic issues. The third question that was raised, and before going to the third question, also the issue of training target is also informed by the sector skills plan. The sector skills plan, in terms of the Act, should inform the sector or should be able to provide information as to what are the demanded skills within the sector in terms of various occupations, in terms of various subsectors. It must also indicate, in terms of Chapter 4 of the sector skills plan, it must also provide information in regard to scarce and critical skills demanded by the sector. Meaning in the gas, in the renewable energy, in the nuclear energy, and the electricity, water, and so forth. So, and that should also inform. So the SLA is dictated by this particular process that I've outlined. Both capacity-related issues, capacity-related, in essence, first and foremost, the board that we have is not an executive. The entire board members are non-executive. The CEO and the CFO are only two board members who are executive. The essence also is to ensure that we improve independence, but in terms of the PFMA, the board is able to provide that for the strategic leadership and ensure that the board does not become a referee and a player at the same time. So it's able to monitor and execution of the service level and the strategy as determined by the board. Now, the area that the CEO has alluded to that it becomes imperative that we must build capacity for the board is that board members, among other things, must understand the legislative requirements that informs the formation of the board, the PFMA and other regulations, Skills Development Act. But most importantly, are issues in regard to risk management. If board members don't have necessary capacity around those particular issues, financial management are some of those particular issues, and primarily how to ensure that as a board, we are able to ascertain that ECTA function and operate efficiently and is able to maximize its outcomes
by utilizing a minimum resources that it has. In regards to the issue question that was raised about the operations, the incognizance of the fact that the revenues that we receive, 18 million, that we receive is not adequate to enable ECTA to have a provincial presence in terms of having regional offices. What we did the previous year was to adopt a strategy of we use specialized projects to create presence in all provinces. In essence, that it does not imply that you must have an office and a person for us as a ECTA to impact in a particular province. An example can be a Northwest and other in Limpopo. We don't have offices there. But we are able to have a presence in terms of various strategic projects that we have to ensure that we are able to participate and make an impact there. So those are some of the thinking that the board has been able to consider to make sure that we are not dependent on offices to impact, but we are able to say that with limited resources, how do you maximize outcome and we're able to impact within these particular areas. But also what we are also thinking moving forward is that we intend to create strategic partners with various either Department of Energy, DPE, other stakeholders, such that we try to utilize the potential that is there, meaning that stakeholders that are there and are able to avail themselves to champion and advance some of the issues that have been advocated by ECTA. So it's more of how do we to think and come up creatively with ways and means that we are able to address the national interest in regards to skills development without duplicating what other sectors do. Other sectors have got offices all over the country. But being cognizant, as I alluded earlier on, that the limited financial resource compels us to think creatively. I've alluded about what informs the need for training. It's the sector skills plan, which is a research document. And that is, in essence, it's a five-year a document which must speak in detail the demanded skills within the sector. It must also categorize those particular skills in regards to various occupation. It must also give you the equity component in terms of the rate distribution of occupations that are there and how many women occupy what types of occupations and people who are disabled, white, black, and so forth. And the supply of skills also must be able to indicate that while you've got this particular demand of skills, which institutions we have that are able to provide us with the required skills, such that when we formulate our project, we are informed in terms of are we having a sector that's adequately capacitated to deliver around those particular issues. But also another hidden aspect in regards to supply of skills in regards to service providers is the equity component of it. And part of the strategic thrust that we took is that one example is that the previous years we did not approve ISO is purely because of it did not reflect the equity component. And for us as a board, it became politically incorrect that the ISO is that will be accredited become a perpetuation of the very same apartheid figure, so where we don't see an emergence of African or black service providers. And that becomes one of the important issues that we had to look into. And part of our debate is that we want to see an emergence of black service providers within the equity context. And over and above that, we need to be cognizant that the funds that we are going to put in any ISOE should be cognizant of the equity aspect, more in also that we don't want to prioritize putting millions of funds in training institutes that are profit-driven. Therefore, we have to look to create a balance between private service providers and public service providers. In essence, we are looking at your FET and others, so that we make sure that those public entities, being FETs that are there, that can play a strategic role to deliver skills for the ECTA. There's more investment on them, and they've been supported to become centers of excellence. The minister, the honourable member also spoke about the minister's budget that speaks around the 2016 issue. I think I've alluded to that in regards to the strategic thinking, in regards to prioritise FETs and HET in terms of investment.
I think it's like the slide that speaks to 2011-16 also, in terms of moving forward, also speaks to that. But the most important aspect is that if the CEO can go to that particular slide, the last two bullets, we speak about the sector skills plan and SLA alignment and implementation. The last bullet we speak of, sector skills plan should also entail key strategic policy thrust. So we are saying, in essence, that we are cognizant of the fact that ESITA tends to have a transversal relationship. And by that we mean that in as much as ESITA can speak to Department of Energy and Department of Water Affairs, we also impact on the Department of Public Enterprise. We also impact on human settlement and other related sectors. So we then have to adopt a more broad-minded approach to issues without negating other departments, other sectors which benefit. And another very typical or practical example is that while ESITA is mandated to design learning qualifications on electricians, all the sectors that are going to do training on electricians are going to take use of the very same learning programs. That's one practical example. Another practical example is that ESITA will have to change some training of electricians, but it does not mean that it's the energy and water sector that employs electricians. The local government employs electricians. The manufacturing sector employs electricians. So that, in a way, I'm trying to expose the transversal relationship of ESITA as an entity. And being cognizant of that, then you are saying that the sector skills plan should entail the key strategic policy thrust of government. So that, therefore, requires that we must strengthen relationship primarily with the Department of Energy, Department of Water, Department of Public Enterprise, and Human Settlement, such that the sector skills plan is also reflective of this key government policy thrust. The previous years, as ESITA, we have not responded convincingly in regards to the nuclear industry. It's been argued that the nuclear constitute part of what is being considered to provide energy within the sector. Now, the question is that how many people are required and what type of skills are required such that we are able to deliver around those particular areas. Now, the current work that has been done currently begins to respond to the nuclear subsector. So we've got a dedicated focus in regard to making sure that we are able to respond to that. Having spoken to the nuclear subsector, also we've got a challenge in regard to the renewable energy and solar and so forth. So those become some of the key policy and imperatives that we are seeing the sector skills plan must begin to respond to. The question raised by Honorable Mativela in regard to what happened to those trained, I think the CEO has responded to that. But I think what we are saying when we are saying that we need to improve performance and quality of training, what we are saying is that we need to move away from number crunching exercise, which has haunted ESITA many sectors for long, and begin to look into impact, more in particular around the quality that we train, and what it therefore means that it will not be good to say that we've trained 5,000 people. It will not be good enough to say that we've met equity target, but also to say that how many of them are employed, how many of them have been able to create sustainable small enterprises, how many of them are contributing positively in regards to socioeconomic development of the country. So that also constitutes part of what we are saying that we need to improve the issue of performance and quality training. Probably to share some of the radical policy changes that have taken place within the city that for this financial year, 50 million has been approved towards training within workplaces. In essence, of cognizance that the number of there is an adequate number of workers who are in demand of skills. Those particular workers who have worked for years, however, they've been deprived to have access of training and to have certificates and qualifications and so forth. So part of the strategic thinking is to say that these particular funds should be utilized to elevate this particular learner. But that particular 5 million, which has made quite a number of some of the employers or training providers not happy, we also said that it must be equitably distributed within all provinces. By so doing that, we are trying to break the monopoly of certain employers who have enjoyed to receive lump sums of money. So we are saying that the cake is not big enough. Therefore, we need to ensure that we impact significantly in all the provinces. So that, in essence, is that we are cognizant of, and more important is that we also want to link what you call employment equity plans, which must also be reflected in the sector skills plan, and that must be linked into the workplace skills plan that are being executed by companies when they train, when they receive the mandated grant. But the most important aspect also is that part of the challenge is that we need to build what I would say stakeholder capacity. What it means is that whilst ECETA does not have authority in regards to mandatory grants that have been released, which is close to 5 million, 50 million, is it 50? 60 million? How much? 91 million, that is. We don't have any authority upon that. So the strategic thinking is that there is capacity within the sector, whereas the workers who are going to participate in the workplace development process are able to make a meaningful contribution. That means that they are able to link the employment equity plans to and translate that to training plans, so that they don't treat this as separate issues. So that's some of the strategic thinking that is there. Part of the training that ECETA have done into that to SDF training, we have not only trained employers to become skills development facilitators, we have also prioritized a training of trade unions, employees, shop stewards, and so forth, so that they are also able to make a meaningful contribution. Interpretation of the SSP, interpretation of various government policies, trust, so that they are also able to cascade that at a company level, so that if 5 workers have been trained, they must be able to say, why we are arguing that these particular 5 workers have been trained in this particular company in relation to this particular strategic trust of the sector and government. What is the actual...
May I stop you? Because I think the bulk of what you're saying is what we're supposed to have as part of the presentation. So I'm not sure whether it does the thing as if you go on and on without it. So this was the first meeting. I think we should try to schedule another meeting where we can then, because you now understand and know what is it that we were looking for. I don't know, because the more you explain, to me, the more we are like we are in 2000. And in 2010, it's like we are still identifying what is it that we want as a country, etc., all those things. It's like we are still talking the national training boards, which were your predecessors before the CETAS came in. So in that, I think, yes, there's some minimal progress, but progress that is not quantifiable, that you can't talk to it to say you've trained so much, got skills, etc., and all those things. That's the prevail. So I think... it is along those routes that I think we should stop you here, and then we'll reschedule. We'll come back again with much more information that will make us then to engage with yourselves. I'm not sure whether you've got another proposal or you want to explain some other things. And
no.
I don't know, why is your CFO acting? What happened to your CFO? In terms of the organogram, acting CFO.
The issue of the CFO, the CEO will clarify that. But what I wanted to probably say also is that to prepare the committee, as the CEO have hinted that probably some of the information can be sent to committee members in advance, and so that it's able to provide clearer information. Part of the challenge is that the actual areas of interest were not properly communicated to the office. So the process of planning for the presentation in a way, it was more of we had to muddle through, so that, but in a way we are able to formulate something. But my request and indulgence to the committee is that if we can be accorded an opportunity for the CEO to send a more detailed and clearer a report that captures all the particular points that you've been able to raise. Muddle through.
Was what we requested from you. Maybe there was some communication breakdown within the secretary and as well, but we wanted to know how far you've gone, and as this sector that is relating to the sector, that we work on as a committee and exercise oversight. You wanted to have that particular broad picture, which your input doesn't talk exactly to that. I don't know, because that is part of what is in the program and what that should have been communicated to yourself.
Okay.
But let's not dispute that now. The best way then is to try and reschedule. We are not sure whether this year or next year, but we'll try and look for the program within the program and then try to reschedule. CEO?
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of the CFO is that we had a disciplinary action instituted against him late last year. So we now have a person that is acting in that capacity for us to be able to, but we are in the process of appointing a new person because we have to wait for the process to be finalized. And that we had just internal matters that needed to be resolved between ourselves and him. Explain further. Okay. Can we go?
To what answer, try to summarize the and then we move on. More than
so you're asking actually the same point I want to raise for the acting CEO, because on the CFO, also about they raise about the water chamber coordinator, but as a department we are on our own and we think the CETA is key for us on the issue of the technical skills and the skills. So I want to know why are they not separate for energy, a separate coordinator. Maybe they know, they must maybe tell us. Other thing I want to know is on the issue of the energy, why are there still some question marks on the performance of the CETA? Is there still rollovers or what? And is there any dropouts of your learners? And what is the reason if there is any dropouts of your learners? The other thing I want also to raise, a person on page 6. You say the departments you are working with and you highlight the departments you are working with. But for me, it's key also because you see co-op governance is nearer to the people and he's talking about turnaround strategy and where energy also playing a role. Now, if you're working with NUMSA in SAUGA, what are the skills they may be saying, who are the technical skills, who are the skills in the sector? So, and if they're raising, what are the CETA actually doing about it? Because, you know, if we don't train people now to fulfill that space, that we're going to really have a big challenge. We can't go on. The CETA is now what I, all the CETA is. Okay.
The members are free then to stay here till 10 to 2. I don't have a problem. But I'm looking at the time and what they have said and think that we can much have this. But try to wind up on your questions, but they're not going to respond now.
No, I think the chairperson, I'd rather be then stop here and then we wait till they when they came back and we can collaborate more. But then I think before they come, send the presentation or things in time so that we can look through it so that we can be actually better prepared outside.
You know, quick chair, all that I'm asking, when they come back, can they also share with us how they've, if any, they've linked with the rescue plan on the economic recovery program? I think it's under Minister Patel. There was that 1.2 billion or almost 2 billion that was established to retrain, whether you had any relations to it. Thanks, Chair.
Just the last word, not to respond to all the questions.
Thank you, Sir Cousin. I think we have actually noted the comments that are made through to us by the Honourable Portfolio Committee on the issues that they raised, and what we are going to do, not trying to defend, but you know, within the space, short space of time that was given to us, we really had to make sure that we come and introduce ourselves, but we'll be able to, on time, get you know, sufficient time to be able to give you all, because we also looked at the program itself, that there were supposed to be about three presentations made on the day, with the principal one being the Department of Energy. So we will definitely make sure that we forward the presentation on time. Thank you very much.
You are okay. You are covered. All right. TDG? Hmm? Covered. Is I covered?
We're looking forward to the next presentation. We're looking forward to the next presentation. Yeah.
I think for the first meeting, CEO, the mic, if you can press it.
Thank you.
I think it was good for the introduction, but as well just to discuss key issues. So please, we will then have to await the next presentation, and we hope that you've heard for yourself what is it that you are looking for, and we hope that you can try to reschedule the meeting this year, I'm sure, before next year, because it's quite critical. Skills development is one of the key issues that I think we have to focus on. So thank you very much, and I hope that we'll be able to get a date from ourselves, and then we will see you next time. For the committee members, the committee program slightly changed, I'm sure, if you're aware. Last week we attended the oil and gas conference in Durban. In Bloemfontein, we were invited by the minister, but it was a little bit late. Only three members were allowed to attend. So it was myself, Honorable Moss, and Honorable Lucas that represented the committee. It was quite a good conference. We hope that we'll be able to get the report from the department and also all the inputs that were made there. So DGG Apani, if you can assist us with your Mr. Mavuso, to forward us that information through our parliamentary liaison person from your department in Kitty, so that we can be able to have those inputs. But it was quite an interesting endeavor. It was unfortunate that not all committee members attended, but I think it gave some inputs and the imperative that govern the liquid fuels charter, which we are going to have the hearings on next month. So we hope that we'll be able to get that report in terms of how far we are as a country, as one of the first charters that we adopted as government. So we are looking forward then to get the input. And then there's a pending conference that we invited, energy conference to Botswana. The committee, the house chairperson has not responded. Huh? I hope the committee secretary and the manager, I see Kabazalam Kize over there as our unit manager. If you can follow up on the issue, because it's taking place when? Next Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and all that. So we need to know as to what is it that we are going to do. Then next week we want to have the portfolio committee meeting. It is the 31st. Right? We want to have the portfolio committee meeting. We are giving members a break to attend to other responsibilities or other committees. We are not going to have a meeting, but I think we'll then, if the conference is approved, that we attend the domestic use of energy, but it's much more. The theme has changed because it is a follow-up of the workshop we attended at the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. Slough managed to attend with myself, and Tinto was off sick at the time, but it was quite a good conference. So they're inviting us to the follow-up one in Botswana, where we are given five members to attend. We've made the application. We are waiting to hear that. And then the hearings on the liquid fuels charter. Here, we have postponed them more than twice, but I think we've got now the final date that we've agreed upon. We're trying to accommodate the NCOP, Economic Development Committee, and we're also trying to get the public enterprise, but I'm not sure whether they'll participate. We've got an assurance from the Economic Development NCOP component that we'll have joint hearings on the liquid fuels charter after 10 years of adopting that charter. They are taking place on the 14th and 15th of September. The first media advert will go out this weekend. And then in terms of the rules, it must run for 2 weeks and the following week, and the closing date will be the 8th of September for submissions, and then we have to allow to compile them to give to members before the 14th and 15th. The schedule is quite tight, but we hope that we have to do it this term, not to defer it more than we've done. And we hope that out of that we'll be able then to get good participation from members and the public about what's going on there. And then we'll go to constituency period. The third term, the fourth term program is still tentative as you received it, but you are going to work on it because it must include the remainder of the visit to Brazil, but the study tour somewhere as part of our five-year program, because we're given the permission by the House Chair that we'll do that before the year end, because they agreed budget to change Brazil due to the traffic that many committees were going to Brazil. So we do have the countries that we have to choose. I think with the assistance of the House Chair, we are going to do that later. And the study tour will be later on then, either November, October. And then we've got, in terms of the rules and the new, is it money? They call it money bill, but it's Money Amendment Act. We like to call it money bill. So there's BRRRRR. It's budget review, whatever thing. It's a long name. Budget review recommendations report that the department must come, 18 DDG, to come before us and then tell us as to what is it that they're going to do in terms of this act. And then we have to interact with them. Entities will be invited, I'm sure, to that meeting as well. We hope to have it 8 October, somewhere October. I don't have the actual date. First week of committees in October, I want to do that in terms of the rules of Parliament. And then we'll then have the remainder then of the visit. We've got still outstanding visit to NEXA and Petro SA. We finish our oversight work there. And ESCOM. We have to go to ESCOM and Lephalale to look at the project there. And pending CF visit. So it's quite an NEFSA. So we still have a lot to cover for this year before we close, but surely the World Cup, I think, was part of the problem, but not a bad problem. It was a good problem because we hosted this and we never experienced any energy shortage. So with all whatever we had, I think it went okay, but let's then try to sacrifice a bit and try to cover the program for this year so that next year is not full of this. So you'll get a revised program during either this week or next week as members. Ne? Philippe Jablan. Philippe is still here. He just found his way to Spain and then it's going to Brazil. And maybe it's better to undertake the Brazil trip in 2013 so that we can attend the Confederations Cup. Because 2014 is out, it's the election. That's the right timing, committee secretary and manager. 2013, at least, we must link it up with the confederation. Okay. On a more serious note, we've got an invitation by AWEPA, Association for European Parliamentarians.